Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, three dots where we're able. We're routine to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to bed in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
For your transgression, you receive the atomic boot to the ass.
Thud!
Oh boy, that sounded bad.
I've fallen and I can't get up!
Hey, 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 traverse the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. A field day for the heat, 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look.
Stop.
the turbo. All rise for King to fill the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. It's old King Shaziz the Terrible here. I'm sitting around the round table, and we got a couple special guests here today, and it's going to be a really wonderful and interesting show. I was thinking about what I wanted to bring to the table today, and I wanted to pose the question about the society. Is there or isn't there an intentional or non-intentional moral decline of society? I can remember back whenever I was a child and I was raised up with certain things that we did and we didn't do, and kind of like a strict family bond there, where you treated each other with respect and you respected your elders and so on and so forth. And so with all that said, let's go ahead and get into the show. Cultus, would you like to do the honors of introducing our guest?
Our guest or our guests?
Our guests.
Plural.
Plural.
On the end. Yes, I can. First up, we have Ma Dancy back with us. How you going, Ma?
I'm very well, sir. Looking forward to tonight's discussion. This is going to be a really good show, and I'm not a special guest. I'm just a guest. I fell off the special list.
No, you're still there, brother.
You haven't read my hate mail. I realise this week that there's going to be a lot of people coming to my funeral to make sure I'm buried.
Yeah, mate, you can guarantee it.
Anyway, keep going.
And our other guest tonight is Rick, and I hope I pronounce this correctly. Is it Saccone?
Saccone,
sorry, mate. We have Rick Saccone. He is an American politician serving as a member of Pennsylvania House of Representatives. Rick has represented the 39th District since 2011 and is a member of the Republican Party. He has also written a book, which the title alludes me, is God in the Government? Was that the one?
God in Our Government.
God in Our Government. Sorry, mate. So I'd like to introduce Rick to you all, and back over to Shaziz, because I'm sure he has a billion and one questions.
Oh, yeah, I've got like a million things running through my mind. I would just like to point out something. You know, we talk to a lot of people from a lot of different nations. We're broadcasting via Awake Radio and No Borders Radio and We Roar Radio and Shaziz Radio and multi other networks that rebroadcast our stream, which is a great deal because we get to touch a lot of lives around the entire globe, and we come from multiple backgrounds, multiple different belief systems. And with that said, you know, when we come to the table as the Knights of the Round Table, we don't always have to agree on things, but we agree to disagree in a respectful manner so that we can bring positive information to the world and put those questions out there on the table, put the new information out there, things that are going to throw the positive pebbles in the pond that's going to affect our entire world. Now, I think that even if you're a non-believer, you could agree that if you just took the Ten Commandments alone out of the Bible, that those are some really good rules to live by, you know. Thou shalt not kill. I mean, it's going to have some bad repercussions if you do. You kill somebody, they're going to want to kill you. So, with or without the religious aspect of that, society needs some sort of moral value set in order to keep, you know, things from being just total chaos. And I believe firmly that our founding fathers believed that as well, and I believe that, you know, that was a moral compass that they set in place to try to keep us from going down the road that we currently find ourselves on, as far as I'm concerned. You know, like I said, when I was a child, my grandfather and my mother raised me up with some morals, you know, where you respected your elders. You opened doors for ladies and that kind of stuff. And as I've watched society in the modern day, I've noticed that the children coming up these days, they don't necessarily believe the way that we believe. They had maybe more liberal parents or something like that. And so, with that said, I hope that sets the stage for the conversation that I want to talk about. Mark, I understand that you've written a book that kind of outlines the history of God in our government. Would you like to talk about that?
Yes. I think you were addressing Mark, but this is Rick.
Oh, Rick. Sorry about that. I told you I was going to do that.
That's all right. I'm out here.
Oh, King Shaziz the Terrible has some screws loose sometimes.
I also want to tell you that, yeah, I've traveled to 70 countries. I've been to religious ceremonies for just about every religion in the world. And so this is not meant to disparage anyone else's religion. It's really a history book to document how the founding of America was based on Judeo-Christian principles, and that is evidenced in the words of our founders and the monuments that we hold dear in our country and our primary source documents. It's everywhere, and I give about 400 pages of examples of that because two generations of our children today have been told that this country has always been secular. Our founding fathers were bad people who owned slaves and were all deists and didn't believe in God and didn't believe in Christ and did so many things bad, but that's a false story that I wanted to bring forth with the actual facts. So I wrote this book, God and Our Government, to document that. And I just want to touch on a little bit something else you said about the moral decline of our country. It goes beyond some of the manners and things we see that our kids are unruly and so forth, but just think about it. I mean, just the other day, we had a dead baby was found in a shopping bag of a girl in a Victoria's Secret store who had given birth in the changing room to the baby and died there. We had in Massachusetts, we had a young man, 14 years old, set his teacher on fire. Another 14-year-old raped a 70-year-old nun. And I believe it was an Australian exchange student that three young Americans shot in the back just for fun. This is beyond just the moral decline of manners and unruliness. We are on a spiral into a moral abyss that we've never seen before in this country. And I think that a part of that is because we've taken God out of our schools and out of our system.
I agree. And one of the things that I was saying off air to you was that I am truly inspired that there is at least one representative out there representing, you know, my beliefs. You know, what you'll find out here if you actually get out there and talk to the average Joe is the average Joe has zero trust in any government officials these days. And because, you know, I do this one joke thing called Congressman Bongwater, and he pretty much talks about how he's going to screw you on taxes, and he just tells you how it is straight out of the gate, whereas opposed to some of the modern-day politicians will tell you, you know, that they're going to go in there, they're going to represent you, and they're going to protect, serve, and uphold the Constitution. You had mentioned earlier when the president basically set his oath of office on a stack of Bibles, and then it gets in office, you know, I expect that if a man puts his hand on the Bible, regardless of whether he believes or not believes, he puts his hand on the Bible, he says that oath, that I expect him to keep that oath. And everyone out here, the average Joe, expects them to keep that oath. And so, you know, with that said, the trust factor in the government these days, if the representatives of the all the governments of the world would actually come down and have these conversations like the Knights of the Round Table, they would understand where it is that we really stand on certain things. You know, what I'm talking about is like, you know, they'll show all these polls that people supposedly agree with this or they supposedly agree with that. I don't agree with somebody putting a 7-foot statue of Satan next to the Ten Commandments. I mean, that's like counterproductive. Now you've just started an argument amongst the believers and the non-believers. Who's right? Who's wrong? Whose statue gets torn down? Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that the trust is very low of people in America and their government, and really around the world in many cases, and for good reason, because the government is untrustworthy. Many of the people in government do not do what they say they're going to do, and they're not telling the truth to the people that they represent, just as you mentioned. So, yeah, we've got to turn that around, and I'm doing that in one small way here. I mean, of course, we have 2,000 bills coming before the Pennsylvania House in any one session. This is just one of them that celebrates actually the 150th anniversary of In God We Trust on our coins. It started in 1864. Under President Lincoln, and I'm celebrating that by asking that motto be displayed in our public schools. It's our government's motto, and it should be displayed to our students. And I'm getting some pushback from that, from people who think, there are actually some people who think that having God displayed in a public school could traumatize our students.
Well,
they have to be in non-believer, for example.
One of the things that bothers me about the whole school thing is that they go by this whole deal about separation of church and state, which if somebody actually pays attention to the Constitution, that phrase is nowhere in the Constitution. It merely states that the government shall not create a religion and essentially force you to believe what, you know, they say. You're free to believe whatever you want to believe. Now, as far as stepping on other people's toes of other people's religion, I'm sorry, but it's a free country. And, can you add, Cultus, can you add Michael in? He's trying to call me.
Live, Mike?
Yeah.
I certainly can.
All right.
Mikey, I got you, mate. Don't worry.
Anyway, I was trying to get to a point. My beliefs from my Christian background is that, you know, Christmas is about Christ. And so when I go to school and I see that the school children are doing a play on aliens and Santa Claus as opposed to anything to do with Christ, because the government literally told them that they could not say anything about God or Christ in school, you know, because it might offend somebody. You know, I'm truly disturbed. I'm truly offended, because that's not what Christmas is all about. I mean, you know, you can't take Christ out of Christmas, otherwise it ain't Christmas anymore. Christmas never was about Santa Claus. And then the fact that we talk about separation of church and state, which, once again, is not in the Constitution if you read it. There is a hand of the government in the churches these days. It goes by the 501(c) tax-exempt status. Now, I know people don't there's folks out there that don't believe and they don't like the whole God thing or whatever, but my deal is this. All right, there's a deal in the Bible that a phrase that kind of rings true to me. It was when Jesus was on the up at the temple, and a man asked Jesus. He said, "Jesus, so should we pay our taxes?" And then Jesus told him. He said, "Well, whose face is on that coin?" And the man said, "Why, Caesar's." And he said, "Well, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and render unto the Lord what is the Lord's." And to me, I took away from that something that probably isn't the way that was actually meant to be, but if I give a contribution to my God and then I ask the government back for it in taxes, then I gave nothing. You see where I'm coming from?
That, yeah, now you said a lot there. You had a whole mouthful there, but...
yeah, that's my problem. I can't shut up.
Rick, I'd like you to make this is.
Let me go back to where you started, and this false notion of separation of church and state. Listen, that's what my book does. It talks about all the reasons why that is a false notion by showing how God has always been part of our government. I mean, the Bible was the textbook in our public schools for 150 years here in America. So if there was no separation up until the 1960s, I'd be like, well, did the Supreme Court just suddenly become Solomon's and decide that, we've overlooked this and we can't have the Bible in schools anymore? Our children learn to read from the Bible. They learn through biblical examples. Any other alternate textbooks in our public schools had biblical examples in them. In fact, if you go back to Noah Webster's original dictionary, not the dictionary from his descendants today, but his original dictionary, and I have an 1828 version of it, you'll see when they define words, they use biblical examples to define the words when Noah Webster wrote his dictionary. So when people learn to read and write for the first 100 years or so in our country, they learn to do it through the Bible. So there was never any separation. I want to add another thing. If you come to our Capitol in Harrisburg, if you walk into the Supreme Court chamber there, right behind the Chief Justice's chair is a 10-foot by 14-foot picture of Moses pounding out the Ten Commandments. And to his right is another picture the same size of Jesus giving the Sermon on the Mount. So we have these things all over. I have hundreds and hundreds of examples all over in our government. They've always been there, but they're being denied now by a group of people who want to sanitize God from our government and our public place, and that's wrong.
Well, my personal belief is if you take God out of the government, that's when the government fails. That's just from my own personal religion. But, you know, back to the whole school thing, I know I went on a long deal, but I'm passionate about this particular subject because, You know, I feel like this. If you're an atheist and you believe that life is over when it's over and there's nothing after that, then fine. You know, don't waste your life trying to destroy other people's hopes and beliefs, you know, by, you know, creating all this ruckus. You know, they'll teach things in school such as evolution, but yet they won't teach creation. And to me, you should give that student both sides of the story and let him make a conscious decision, because we're all on our own spiritual journey as far as I'm concerned, and we all have to walk that path. But if you're teaching just one side of the story, now you've got a group of a generation coming up who never even knew the story to begin with. You see where I'm coming from?
Absolutely. I don't want to dominate. I don't know how many of your other guests want to chime in or not, but, you know, when you go back, and again, I'm focusing on the history of my book, but when you go back to the founding of Pennsylvania, really, when William Penn came here from England and founded this country, when you talk about when he founded our state here, when you talk about how he thought about government, now, he was a Quaker. People say, oh, he didn't even believe in Christ. I mean, what did he think about God and government? His saying that he wrote in the Charter for Pennsylvania is, whereas the glory of Almighty God and the good of mankind is the reason and end of government, therefore government is a venerable ordinance of God. William Penn, the founder, who came here, decided that the reason we have government is to glorify God, and it's a venerable ordinance of God, and it should reflect God. So all this idea that this separation of church and state has been around for a long time, it's not. It's a very recent notion that has been injected into our society, and that's what I'm fighting against.
Can I chime in for a sec, Shazoo?
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I'm not going to chime in too often tonight, but I've been fortunate, I've travelled many countries. I heard you said before, Rick, you've been to 70-odd countries. I've been to many. I've lived in many. I'm living in the Philippines. I'm from Australia. I lived for 18 months in America, ended last year. And it shocked me, and I think the problem is very, very simple. It shocked me. I was in Utah listening to the radio, and the federal court had just upheld a case where a police officer had died. They left his badge and a little cross on the highway where he died on duty, you know, as a symbol of his thing. And I call them atheists or non-Christians, brought a court case saying they were so offended by that cross they could no longer drive on that road. And they won. But, you know, they had to remove the crosses. Well, they found a way around it. But what struck me then, and then I found many, many other cases of they're trying to ban nativity scenes and murals in California.
Uh-oh. We're having trouble with the call there. Hang on there, folks. We'll get them back.
Hold up. I've actually lost Ziz there for a moment.
All right, are you back?
A couple of seconds. You're right there for this?
Yeah, keep going. Mark?
You're still showing it here.
Yeah, no, he dropped from the call.
Okay. Well, I'll keep going because it's still on air.
No. This is our connection.
Yeah, keep going. You're live. Yeah, you're live. Keep going.
It's reconnected.
All right. I'm having a little problem.
There's Chris. Yeah, he's talking about something.
Keep going.
I'm open to connect if anyone needs me to.
Keep going.
We're still on?
Yes.
Keep going.
Okay. Anyway, just to finish off quickly, the difference is, I was giving a bit long lead up there, is in America, you're letting, they call it simple libertarianism and all that. It's not. You're denying people's right to practice religion, and yet you say you're a free country. In Australia, and I use this example, we've got a simple, simple law. You can practice any religion you want, provided, you know, it doesn't hurt anybody. But you're not allowed to prevent anybody else from practicing theirs. So if you don't like the children's nativity scene at the school and you find it offensive, don't come. But it's been done that way for 100 years, and it's going to keep getting done that way 100 years. If you want to go to Muslim festival, great. If you want to go to Buddhist festival, great. But don't come along, and the Christians aren't going to go to the Buddhist festival and tell them to stop, or tell the Muslims to stop. It's the right to practice religion, but you do not have the right to stop anybody else. That's where America has got it very, very, very wrong from nearly every other country in the world. Now, to finish off this point, I'm in the Philippines, and we have in some section of the Philippines a very large Muslim population, but it's mainly 95% Christians. The other day, we had 12 million people, 12 million, in one Christian street parade, the Back Nazarai parade, 12 million. And the Muslims, you know, they didn't raise any objections, that the whole of town shut down and there's 12 million people clogging the streets. They celebrated it as well because they respect it. And they've learned over here to respect each other's. They still have a few skirmishes and a few gunfights and whatever, but generally speaking, so the problem is simple as this. In America, you've lost the right to practice the freedom of religion because you're allowing other people to suppress it. And I will finish off.
Well, I agree. There's one point that I'd like to make as well. You know, a lot of people are talking about the First Amendment right, freedom of speech and stuff like that. And on one hand, it's okay for them to wear a shirt with some filthy words on it or whatever. But on the other hand, you know, they want to step on the toes of the people who want the right to, you know, present, you know, like you said, the cross on the side of the road, you know. I'm offended by that cross on the road, but wait a second. Look at that shirt you're wearing, you know. I'm offended by it. Where does the line stop there? You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, Rick, can we get, Rick, what's your response to that about the suppression of religious practices in America?
Well, you're right in one sense, but in another sense, the founders actually had it right. The First Amendment to our Constitution, to the Bill of Rights, has five freedoms, and the first of those five freedoms is freedom of religion. And it simply, very simply states, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, nor, as you said, prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So it's already in our Constitution that you can't prevent anyone from practicing their religion. Unfortunately, that's been interpreted by some in this country, the first part of that, that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, that any mention of God in the public place is establishing religion. And so they've kind of outlawed it and tried to secularize the whole country. So it's the interpretation of our First Amendment of the Constitution that is causing us problems and is causing freedom of religion to be suppressed. So you're right, we do have to push back on that. And that's what I've been trying to do in the legislature and, you know, through my writings.
Well, Rick, so Michael...
I have a question. Oh,
there you go.
How are you doing? This is a question for State Representative Rick. What do you suppose is the agenda behind the removing of God and religion from the public square?
Well, I imagine there are multiple agendas. You know, there are people out there that have their different reasons for it. But when if I look at the at some of the atheist groups that I've talked to and debated, I mean, I know that their desire is they don't want to be reminded of God. That they're running from God. They're angry at God, the God they don't believe in, by the way. And so they don't want to be reminded. They don't want to see that anywhere in a public place to remind them of the thing they're running from and the thing that they despise. So their agenda is to secularize everything in the public place and diminish God. Now, for some other libertarians, you know, that I talked to, theirs is they want almost chaos. They want freedom to do anything they want. And having God around with a bunch of rules, and a Ten Commandments and a book of rules there, inhibits them from doing living the way exactly the way they want to live without any rules. So I mean, their agenda is different, and they just don't want any rules in their life, and they don't want anybody telling them anything to do. So I mean, and then there's others out there. So there's a lot of people that have joined together on one side to say, you know, we've got to completely secularize America because it still is probably the one the biggest Christian country in the world with such a strong heritage. I'm really happy to see what's going on in the
field. You mind if I make a couple follow-up points to that? Do you
sure.
suppose that there is a plan to erode the true source of a man's natural rights and his sovereignty, which is God? If they can do away with that, then the state becomes the source of a man's rights, does it not?
Absolutely, and I already see evidence of that. I teach international relations in college, and I see in the textbooks now that natural law has been replaced with, the definition of natural law has been replaced with a definition that is completely secular. And so there certainly is an effort to erase the fact that our rights come from God. They don't come from man. And I lived in North Korea for a year. I was a diplomat on the nuclear power plant project. project in North Korea under the Clinton administration. And you can see a country that's completely to the opposite, that has effectively erased God from life.
What?
And made man their law, and man's rules, the arbiter of their laws. You can see what's happened to that country. That's an extreme at one end, but that's what happens when you completely sanitize God from government.
I would like to make a point in somewhat of a form of a question on this on that particular point that you just made. You know, we were talking earlier about when our representatives go to office, they put their hand on the Bible and they swear to uphold the laws and the constitutions of the lands. And so if you were to take God completely out of the government, per se, then what higher power would they... How would they take their oath from then on out? Would they put their book on their hand on a law book somewhere, which probably still in some of the laws still has references to God?
You'd only have to ask Julia Gillard, mate.
Huh?
You'd only have to ask Julia Gillard, the recent Prime Minister of Australia, because she didn't. She did not swear in on the Bible.
So
they have a different oath drawn up for it.
If, like Michael said,
specifically.
If, like Michael said, that our oath, our true rights come from a God, and nobody can now say God or even swear in on a Bible anymore, where's our true rights come from? Is those now going to be transferred over into the hands of the so-called elite slash representatives of the government? You know, are we now... swearing our allegiance strictly to the state and giving them full power over us, as opposed to our divine power that we was given initially when we were created? You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And that's kind of the example I give in North Korea. I mean, they're loyal to, now Kim Jong-un, before that Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung. So, that he becomes your loyal to the state. You're loyal to the government. You're loyal to the leader of that government when you take out God. And that's very dangerous.
So essentially, to those folks, he becomes God. He is the giver of rights now.
Yeah, and in North Korea, that's exactly what he's become. I mean, they bow down in front of his statue as they pray. He has become a God. Now they'll say that they have other religions there, but they're controlled by the government, and there's a whole story behind that. But the religion is Juche philosophy, and Kim Il Sung has become the new god.
Well, that's pretty scary.
There's an important point here too. When you say God, and look, I sent my girls to a Catholic college because I thought they had a moral code, but they're not Catholics, but. In Thailand, for instance, I know they got a little bit of trouble with the government now, but they're Buddhists. And when you say God, I'm as comfortable with a Buddhist monk as I am with a Catholic priest. I respect all the religions and their beliefs. And if you read the Buddhist Bible, as I call it, it's like the New Testament. You couldn't tell the difference as far as a moral code. But they're a beautiful nation because they is such a powerful thing. The church, if you want to call Buddhism church, it's such a powerful thing there, and they have a beautiful laid-back approach to thing, an honesty and a gentleness about them, and a wonderful moral code. They really have. Forget what you see on the tourism stuff. The average Buddhist is a wonderful person. And they haven't separated the state from their religious belief. It's still a very important role. They respect their king and they respect the government. But the Buddhists, you see the monasteries everywhere. And, if somebody builds a building and the shadow falls on the Buddhist temple, they have to rip that building down. You know, that's the respect they have for religion. And because they have a faith, because they have a religious following, and this goes for many countries, it doesn't matter whether your God's our God, our Christian God, or whether it's a Buddhist God, or whether it's here in the Philippines, it's 95% Christian, but whoever it is, it's this point about the separation from the state. And when you're separated, like in North Korea, you're cactus. But no matter what your religious belief is, if you keep that as a major moral element of your government and your life, you'll find it really has an impact on how people conduct themselves.
I agree.
Sorry, you might not agree with that, Rick, but That's how I see it. It doesn't just have to be strictly Christian. In America, yes, but in other countries, you've got to have that moral, religious code attached to the government.
Well, and that's like the point I made earlier about the Ten Commandments. You know, whether you're a believer or a non-believer, you take a step back and actually read the Ten Commandments, there is a really fine list of morals to live by, because any one of those Ten Commandments broken has some sort of negative result towards you or the folks around you. And so, with that said, what harm does the Ten Commandments do to anybody out there, even if they're a non-believer? You know, I'm offended because I see these. No, I don't see that. You know,
Rick, what's your thoughts on that? You know, you're not opposed, but you've dealt with many countries in national relations. You would have seen it yourself in some countries like Thailand, the beautiful following of the Buddhist people.
Yeah, I don't begrudge any country, to practice religion, or any people to practice religion any way they want. In America, you can practice religion anywhere you want. My Muslim friends, and I studied Islam in Egypt, my Muslim friends were quick to tell me that they felt more free to practice Islam in America than almost any place else in the world.
Isn't that ironic?
It's very ironic, but that's how free we are here. You can practice religion, any religion here in America. We have all the religions here. They're free to practice, free to build their own houses of worship, or you're free to practice nothing. But that's not to say that we should deny the history and heritage that this country was founded on, which are Judeo-Christian principles, and that's all I'm trying to bring forth. I'm not trying to ask anybody that they need to convert to Christianity. I just want them to acknowledge that our country was founded on that. And when you try to erase that from our history and from our government, then we're going down a different road that I think is very dangerous, and you can see the result of that, the fruit of that in today's society.
I couldn't agree with you more.
You become North Korea otherwise.
That's right. Eventually you do.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more on that. You know, if you look back through history, and like I said, the folks that I was raised up with, you know, my grandfather and my grandma used to sit around and teach me out of the Bible, you know, and she pretty much left it up to me to make my own decision, you know, walking my own spiritual journey. But she did put those moral seeds in my head that later on made me the man that I am today. You take that completely out of school, you take that completely out of government, and like you guys just said, you become like North Korea, where the leaders of the world, or leaders of that particular government, they are now God. They now control your sovereignty, your freedom. And far as I'm concerned, anybody that even remotely steps on that sovereignty or freedom, you no longer have freedom. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I just want to, if I could put a plug in for my book, I think this book is applicable to anyone in the world, because you can look at your situation, your country, and you can say, look at America, look how God was part of their government from the founding, let's look at our country. You can apply this, you can learn from this book, you can learn from how America did it, you can learn and compare it to your own country, wherever it is in the world, wherever your listeners are, and then they can they can make some comparisons to what's going on in their country today. Not many of them have similar things going on around the world.
How do we get a hold of your book?
Yeah, do you have a website?
Is it on a website? Yeah,
actually, the best place to get it is Amazon.com. That's available on the internet worldwide. So,
Can you throw some information in the little chat deal that I can post out into the chat room?
Absolutely. I'll show you a picture of the cover and the title and the name. And if you go to Amazon, there's some good reviews of it on there by people who picked it up. And there's an explanation of the book, and I think it's valuable. History is always valuable, and we can learn from that no matter where we are or where we're living now.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Marty.
I said, how much is the book?
On Amazon, I think it's $23.75.
Well, I'm thinking I want to get me a copy.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm going to get one.
I appreciate that.
I think it's going to be unanimous across the board with the Knights. I think we're all heading to Amazon and getting a copy, are we?
I think I'll run an article on it, because sometimes I write about the Philippines. The reason being, my final point for the night, then I'll shut up, is the respectfulness of children. Now, I lived in America and Australia, and the kids aren't respectful. They're little brats, you know. I want my Game Boy. You see them complaining at the airport. They're impatient, they're disrespectful. they've got a bit of lip. I'm not saying every kid. Some kids are okay. I lived in Salt Lake City, and a lot of children there were quite respectful because, you know, they've got a pretty big church following. And but over here, I've got to tell you, I'm just blown away. Every small child or anybody younger than me, even people 20 years old or so, I won't say how old I am, but... Anyway, they grab your hand, even three-year-olds and two-year-olds, they grab your hand, these are Christian kids, they grab your hand, grab their hand and asking you to bless them, they put it to their forehead. So they take your hand and put it to their forehead every time they greet you, every time. And every child here, I'm called Sir Marco, they don't really know who I am, or Uncle Mark or Mr. Mark or whatever. But the kids are delightful. They've got nothing. I mean, they've got nothing. You know, people saw my New Year's Eve newsletter that went out. You know, there's a girl with nothing, the wrong size shoes, two-year-olds. And we do a bit of charity work here. But the kids are so delightful. They're happy. They're cheering. But they're very respectful of adults. And they have the extended family. And that's the other thing I was leading up to. What you're missing in America and Australia and a lot of Western nations is... whether you're the three-year-old or the 80-year-old, you know, they don't have a healthcare system or an old folks home to ship granny off to you. They're normally living in one of their relatives' house and they have extended family. They don't have a generation gap. And the reason they don't have a generation gap, they share the same moral code, if you like, the same religious beliefs. The church attendance today, I was on my motorbike going for a ride, it was chock-a-blocks. The road with people all going to church. Everybody goes to church. Doesn't matter whether it's Jehovah's Witness or the Mormons or mainly Catholics or whatever. But this beautiful code, its children are the most wonderful, even the teenagers are the most respectful people I've ever met in my life, and they're happy and they've got nothing. And I don't know where we got wrong. Have we spoiled our kids? Have the schools failed to introduce the moral code by eliminating the Bible? What's happened? What's gone wrong, Rick, in your opinion? Why I come to this beautiful country and all the children are respectful, they attend church. My wife just come back from church with a daughter. They have this one, religion is part of every day here, yet in America I felt very secular and distanced from it. What's your feeling?
America was like that at one time. The America I grew up in wasn't like the Philippines that you're describing. The problem is the secularization of America has erased all judgment. There's no rules. Our schools aren't taught that moral code because that would be judgmental. And so our schools are in chaos. Our education has gone down. America is no longer the leading country in the world in science and math and so forth because our kids, they don't want to learn. They don't feel compelled to learn. They can do what they want. And you can see that, as you saw with the kids that you say don't have manners and our respect for their elders. We have, in my state alone, we've had 38 rapes last year in public schools. We had 5,000 assaults. We have assaults on teachers. These kinds of things never happened when I was growing up because we were taught a moral code and we were held to it.
Well,
but the breakdown of that moral code has now manifested itself to all kinds of crimes and breakdown of basic civil society.
And Rick, isn't this one of the things that George Washington warned us against as the founding, our founding father and president of this country? I mean, he explains to us the dangers if we are going to remove any kind of moral, ethical instruction from schools, then we're going to be producing generation upon generation of amoral people, which is what we find today.
I agree, and Michael.
They don't even teach pagan ethics that you could find with Aristotle and Nicomachean Ethics. They don't even teach that. So, you know, this is where we are. This is where we find ourselves. This is the reason why we have cultural upheaval the way we do, Rick. And I'm just curious.
Well, listen, all of our founding fathers taught that. And, you know, we have over 250 founding fathers in America, not just the three or four that you hear of. But I want to tell you what one said, because he echoes. This is one that you probably don't know as well, but he is very famous. His name was James McHenry. You probably heard of Fort McHenry. That's where the fort outside Baltimore where Francis Cucky wrote our Star-Spangled Banner. For I know your audience around the world doesn't know that, but he said this. He was also a signer of the Declaration of Independence, by the way, and fought with George Washington at Valley Forge. He said, "In vain about the Bible, we increase penal laws and draw entrenchments around our institutions. Bibles are strong entrenchments. Verily above, men cannot pursue wicked courses and at the same time enjoy quiet conscience. He knew that the Bible, you know, I spent a lot of time in Harrisburg increasing the penalties on laws and making misdemeanors felonies and making summary offenses misdemeanors and so forth to try to control people's behavior. But that's all in vain, he said. He recognized, and so did all the other founding fathers, including George Washington, without the Bible, because the Bible is that self governing aspect on our individual behavior that keeps us from committing crimes, whether there's a law or not. When you have the Bible in that moral code, or any moral code, whatever country you're in, then people won't need laws to keep them from committing crimes or behaving improperly. He knew that, so did all the founding fathers, and we've gotten away from that in this country. We're paying the debt of it.
I would like to touch back on the education portion for a second, if I might. I heard something really disturbing on the news yesterday about they wanted to literally make a high school where you would have two separate styles of diplomas, one for the folks that couldn't get all the credits and one for the folks that weren't totally up to par as far as graduation. When I was going through school, you had to learn the Constitution. You had to learn a lot more than you actually had to do now. But if you take the education and you divide it up into two separate levels to where, you know, you don't have to be very knowledgeable, but you can still graduate from high school, you're cheating at least a large portion of the new generations of children coming out into the workforce. You're cheating them out of a proper education by not holding their feet to the fire. We're going to talk about morals, that's a moral decline that we're talking about. If you're not going to give that child every possible opportunity once they step out into the world, if you cheat them out of... I've seen kids graduate who can't even hardly read. I've seen kids that don't know anything about math. And so with the government putting their hand in the school, putting their hand in the religion and all that kind of stuff, and then the parents, you know, it takes like two parents to pay the bills these days. Society is in some serious trouble as far as I'm concerned. Am I wrong about that?
No, I mean, one of the reasons why some places are considering going to two separate diplomas, really not a diploma, what it is our high schools have been watered down so much that to graduate with a high school diploma means almost nothing anymore. It's not an indicator of how much intelligence you have or whether you're able to calculate math or whether you're able to even read. And so there's been an effort to say, look, what we need to do is have an actual diploma that says, yeah, you passed and you're at least a certain level, you can expect a certain level, and then have a certificate of attendance that says, yeah, I went through the courses, but I didn't make it through, but I'm too old to stay in high school now, so I'm moving on, you know, but I'm old enough to go out into the world, but I didn't actually receive a diploma. I didn't actually fulfill the requirements to say I'm an educated young person. That's what they're trying to do. And it's a shame because it reflects the fact that our schools cannot deal with the fact that, we have to teach these kids. We're so afraid to have to teach them. That's judgmental. If we give them things and we force them to take it and force them to learn it, you're considered, you're being too judgmental, and we shouldn't do that. We should allow our kids to be free to do what they want.
Well, that's the whole, you hear that my daughter went over to America as an exchange student from Australia, and on her second day, she had to take an American history exam. She got second in the whole school, and she's an Australian. And she was shocked. And she's never been taught American history in Australia. Yet she got second in the school, and she says, "Dad, what's wrong with them over here?" And she said, "I got second in the whole school." And then the next day, they had to do a lockdown, practice when the gunman comes in and shoots everybody up. And somebody had been in and killed students at that school. And they're asking her, "Oh, how often do you do a lockdown exercise in Australia?" And she was in shock. She was shaking. She says, "We've not even done a fire drill." And I'm thinking, and this is a point of your book, is separating state from religion and that moral code. You're doing the same thing with your school, you're dumbing it down, not being able to have judgmental. And that's what all this getting away from God is, so you don't have everybody's the same. They dumb down the common denominator. People don't want to take responsibility for their own actions. And that's where you're going wrong with the education system, because over here in the Philippines, the sponsor a few children to go to school, they grasp it. And if you give them a few bucks, the $5 a year it takes to get them to school, or the $100 a year, whatever it is, they grasp it. And they take that education seriously. They know how valuable it is and what an opportunity. And as such, nearly everybody I'm working with in that, you know, they've all got degrees, diplomas. They're becoming, I'll give another generation, and I won't say in 2 or 3 years, the people in Asia are way more qualified and educated now than they are in America. So what's going to happen in another generation? All these people are going to be highly educated. You're not going to be the leaders in science anymore. You're not going to be the leaders in technology.
Not anymore.
You're going to be working. You're going to be working for these guys. They're going to own corporations. That's exactly where it's heading.
How bad it is, Mark. This comes from a real example. I showed because I saw some girls doing this. I had a bunch of 8th grade girls in the class, and I showed them pictures of George Washington, John Adams, Abraham Lincoln, those kind of things. They couldn't identify them. But I showed them pictures, because it was in an actual teen magazine, of no faces, just the legs of modern celebrities. And all the girls could identify by the legs alone, by the bare legs of Britney Spears and all these different singers and so forth. They knew who they were by looking at their bare legs alone, not even with a face. But they couldn't identify people in history, major people of American history. This is how bad our children have got. We're focused on a celebrity culture here that has no grounding in history or our rights or religion or where we came from. And so we're headed to a place I'm sure we don't want to go in the end.
Well, I just want to jump in. It's James there. I just wanted to jump in on the homeschooling issue, because personally, from an Irish perspective, when I was growing up in Ireland, I mean, my parents literally told me, you know, they're educated people, and they told me, academically, get what you can out of the school system, but you will get more in the home. And they taught me and my brothers more in the home than I ever got. I weighed myself to self-education 10 years at university, but I was told I would get more out of the home than I did, you know, and I got an education.
Yeah, that's good. And I think my book is great for homeschoolers, whether they're in America or anywhere else. This is good history that I think any homeschool parent should include in their curriculum.
The philosophy, I think, is that was to actually get outside the indoctrination of the academic system in Ireland.
Hold on, we're losing you there. Mark, can you mute your mic? Mark. All right, we got to get him to mute his mic, because we can't hear what he's saying. All right, go ahead. Mark, can you mute your mic? Oh.
Hello.
Drowning somebody out. Sorry. Right, go ahead with what you were saying there.
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know.
Oh, man, technical problems going on here.
Which is left, right, and center.
I can hear you again. I lost you for a while.
Okay, I could have made the point anyway.
All right.
There it is.
James, try again.
Try again, James.
Okay. I'm just saying that the indoctrination of the school system in Ireland is like ridiculous. Like, I mean, they literally are drip-feeding what academia wants to be, you know, what they want to teach, what they want to educate. You know, it's a one-sided philosophy that we're taught, like, you know, and I've learned more outside the school system, my point, and my parents educated us to not believe in the academic school system, you know. To get your basic math out, get your basic English, get your basic skill, but by no means rely on it and see extracurricular learning, alternative learning, other methods of learning, whether it's visual or in the home or experiential, these are the methods for learning. This is the philosophy that I was taught. And a lot of people in Ireland are doing that. And it was done through homeschooling. Now, I went to school. Like, I mean, I went to university, spent 10 years in university, and you know, Half my education in university was just to get it on paper. I already had it from my parents. Now, again, I came from a very educated family, and a very intelligent family. You know, most of us are all engineers in the family. So, you know, I did have an environment that was very, very blessed, very lucky for. homeschooling is the way for me, and really, you know, I think if parents can homeschool, you know, you just get so much more out of it. Not only that, that the kids going through the school system are so much more brighter and better and open to things, like being basically, you know, kind of chipping off the old blockers and things.
Yes. Gentlemen, I'm going to have to sign off. I really enjoyed it. I have another speaking engagement this morning, and I'm going to have to go, but I enjoyed the discussion, and maybe we'll do it again sometime. And I hope that your listeners out there will give my book a chance.
Rick, before you take off, first I'd like to say thanks for joining us on the Knights of the Round Table, and you're more than welcome to come back anytime you want, and I will post links to your book on there, because I believe in the message that's inside that book, and I'm honored and I'm inspired that there's actually a representative out there who's, you know, essentially talking about my views. You know, the politicians these days, they've lost touch with the people of the world, and essentially, like I said earlier, there's a huge lack of trust, and in my mind, that's a dangerous thing when you're talking about, you know, trying to put together a nation that's actually going to function right. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, and I thank you very much for the kind words, and God bless all of you, and a Happy New Year.
All right, you take care.
Same to you.
Thanks very much, Mike.
Bye-bye now.
Well, guys, that was a wonderful conversation there with Representative Rick Saccone. Is that how it pronounced there?
Saccone.
Well, great stuff. Anyway, you guys want to keep going on with this subject or move on to something else?
That's up to you, buddy.
Well, it's up to the round table, everybody.
Can we talk about Fibonacci spirals?
About what?
Of course.
Oh, we just went around the corner there.
Fibonacci sequence is one of the most powerful sequences in nature. I went to art school, and we used the sequencing to paint paintings with. It's brilliant. It's great.
Well, that's some amazing stuff. I'm sure I'm still got my brain wrapped around this particular subject so far. You know, we got to really seriously think about this. As you know, any of these societies out here, if society keeps going in the direction that it is, you know, there's only you could go down two roads in life. I mean, you could either go down the hard road or you can go down the easy road. And I remember who the famous person had said it, but you know, if you don't pay attention to history, you're bound to repeat it over and over again. And with that said, you know, I see the road that we're on isn't a very good one. If we're having kids come about a school that can't read, they can't practice their religion freely or anything like that, and suddenly the government's at a point to where, you know, they no longer put their hand on a Bible and swear an oath. If you're not swearing an oath on the Bible or to some sort of higher power than yourself, then, you know, what's the point of even swearing at all? Just give your word and a handshake. Hey, I'm going to go and represent you before Congress or the Senate or whatever, you know, the Parliament. I'm going to go represent you, and you just have to trust that, you know, my word is that, you know.
Which is this.
Yeah.
I make a point about this, and I agree with you 100%. I also, the point that James Swagger was making earlier, I also totally agree with. I think what is needed today, We all of us understand the situation that we're in as far as culturally. I think what is needed is a complete cultural transformation. And you know, all of us here are trying to educate adults as to the realities of what's happening. But I think if you really want to make inroads in this transformation, you have to start at the earliest level of human formation. And that means the children. They know this. This is the reason why they're indoctrinating our children. Well, we have to do something to stop that and arrest control, you know, back to the families and the parents. And this is something that they've been doing for some time to try and seize control of the formation of our children. So we have to totally step back and look at where we are and where we're headed, and we have to say, do you want to continue down this road, or do families want to make a sacrifice? Do they want to make a sacrifice and have, you know, the mother in the home as, you know, the parents as primary educators of their children, which is, the nature of parenting, to be educator first and foremost for their children. They should not be abdicating that responsibility to the school or anywhere else. That's the parents' responsibility. Okay, well, I'm being hard here.
No, I agree.
Being hard here.
It's but it starts at home.
This point, and so the parents have to educate their children in the right ways, in truth. Okay, they have to be the ones to teach their children what's right from wrong, because they're certainly not going to get it inside the school.
Well,
okay, so well, that's where it begins.
What do parents do, though? They get the kids to watch TV, and the kids are getting their moral code off watching TV 6 hours.
Precisely, Mark. It's a disaster.
Well, and it's... I agree with you, Michael.
Just throw the TVs out. Give parents the tools in order to educate their own children. Homeschooling is the way to go, as James is saying. And, you know, this is going to change everything. The family is the key. The family is the key.
Yes.
If you can make the family, this house of love, it's going to be like a blinding radiance to the people that are in darkness. And they'll look at this family and they'll say to themselves, you know, they'll be like a virtue-making machine, okay? And these people that are coming from these families are going to be like a blinding radiance to people that are in darkness. This is where we should be focusing the effort.
I agree with you, Michael, with exception to one point. I don't necessarily subscribe to the fact that we actually have to get rid of the TVs or the internet per se, but what I do say is that we need to, as parents, sit down before we put a kid in front of a video game, check this video game out, know the content, and ask the tough questions. Would I play this video game with my mother, or would I watch this video with my mother, you know? Because I see that there's a lot of ratings on a lot of different video games that parents will just go out and buy these video games for the kids just because the kid raised a ruckus and wants this video game. But in this video game, they're teaching first-person shooter and murder and rape and assault and all this kind of stuff. And in society, you know, while we sit here and we tell our little girls and little boys that this is the way you have to look, the way that model looks on TV, you know, sit down and have conversations with your kid. You don't have to look like that to be beautiful. I find you beautiful just the way you are. And you see what I'm talking about, where you're finding a balance in between, you know, where you can show them what's out there in the world, but at the same sense, monitor and try to bring your good values into their mind, you know, plant that seed so that hopefully they'll take that on with their children. Am I wrong?
Yeah, but how are you going to get society to do this? We all agree with it, but how do you get society to hold it to it?
Well, sitting around here at the Knights of the Round Table, we're essentially preaching to the choir because we're all of like minds and we believe this. But where I stand is that we can actually make a difference by living our life and leading by example. When other people from the outside looking in see how we live our life and how respectful our children are, they might very well ask us, hey, you know, how do you get your children to be so respectful? And then you just sit down and tell them the cold, hard facts, you know. You raise them up to respect their elders. You raise them up to open doors for ladies. You raise them up the way that you feel that you were either raised up or right, or maybe your parents weren't so good, but you broke those chains and you started raising your child the way you believe was right. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, that's what I'd go with it.
All right, I see one more element we haven't discussed. That is something I've observed by living in many, many countries. And I don't want to be too critical of America. I'm critical of Australia and a lot of Western nations. There's too much emphasis, really, on materials possession, judging persons by their rather than their character, by their house, by their car. I've even had my mother call me up and say, your brother's got a better car and a better house. He's more successful than you. And I said, he's a miserable bastard. I'm out having the time of my life. You know, so the thing is, you know, I've come here and I'm learning from a culture. I'm here to learn. I'm learning from a people that have nothing. And because they've got nothing, they're not trying to achieve it. You know, they like have a good cell phone. I won't take that away from them. But when they've got nothing and you're not desiring possessions, I said, why don't they look after their houses better? Why don't they do better? They're not attached to it. They're not attached to material possession. What they're attached to is people. and doing good deeds to each other and looking after Granny. And, you know, what I love here is whether it's the 3-year-old nephew or cousin or 20-year-old or grandmother, when you have a party here, everybody has a good time. There's no age difference. But the main thing is, because they've got nothing to start with. I was in a church the other day, New Year's Eve. They built it out of bamboo. You know, it blew down in the last storm and they threw it back up again. These people got nothing. But boy, do you think they had the world's best Christmas party? Do you think they had the, you know, I was in awe. They had their first wedding ceremony there. 3 couples got married and they didn't know what to do or say. It was hilarious. But it was great because they're trying to achieve this beautiful moral code. But they've got no possessions, but they're happy. And I'm trying to find out, how come they're so happy? You go look it up on the internet, you know, some of these Asian nations and poor South American nations are the happiest people in the world. Why are you so miserable in Australia in some areas and in America? So I think the missing element that we haven't discussed is this desire for money or being judged on ownership, possessions, control and everything else. You've got to let go of that. I'm not a communist. I'm just saying sometimes it can give the kids the wrong message that they who's got the best Mercedes is the better person. That's not necessarily the case.
Well, I agree, and I know this kind of sounds crazy, but we the people actually have the power to steer the media off in a different direction. And one point of that is the fact that the rating systems on all the major medias, if you notice, if you pay attention back, maybe say let's go back a year or two back, there's certain subjects they wouldn't even remotely touch on mainstream media. But after their ratings started dropping down and they noticed that the alternative media was starting to get more attention than they were, suddenly they began to start touching on them subjects. Not as in-depth as we in the alternative media would be doing, but they did start turning around to where they would talk about certain things. And so simple ads, you watching an ad on TV and, you know, it's talking about Nikes or whatever name brand out there and you just click off that doggone ad. These modern day TVs, they got ways of telling whether or not people's actually paying attention to the show, whether they're actually getting the views or the listeners or whatever. And so if you don't agree with something, switch it off, change the channel, go put it on something else, and when the ratings start dropping to the dirt, you can actually start steering the media in the opposite direction. And I know that sounds far-fetched because the average Joe, especially here in America, and you weren't being too hard on America, I'm an American and I'm hard on America because I see the decline that's going on, it sickens my stomach. The average Joe out there lives in a bubble. And the children are being taught, you have to look this way, you have to dress these clothes. And then the other children, whenever a kid comes there who has lesser clothes or maybe doesn't look as good as everybody else, they tease that child and give him a rash, you know, because, you know, you must be poor. You got those crappy Kmart shoes as opposed to what I've got, you know. And so all this stuff here, it comes from the media outlets out there that continuously pump this stuff and before these children, you know, during the cartoons themselves are violent. You know, cartoons themselves, they put witchcraft out there, they put violence out there, they put things out there that if you as a parent was really paying attention to, you might not want your child to watch. But as these children are watching, they're being bombarded with advertisements for this toy or that toy or whatever, this shoe, that clothes. And they're seeing all these kids on TV and their favorite actors wearing all this stuff, and they think they have to have this. So this is how our mentality over here is being trained, so to speak, is by what we've actually witnessed seeing on TV. We try to model our life from some sort of alternate false reality that we see when we look in that nifty little box there. You see where I'm coming from? Nobody?
Everyone else is quiet.
Well, I'll give the great irony of that. Over here, all the women want to be white and not have the nice tans. They've got nice natural tans, and they buy and advertise all these cosmetics to make them whiter. Yeah, when I'm in America, in Utah, all the women are going to the tanning clinic, you know, to get a suntan. And I'm going, my God, they really got this sorted out, haven't they? The advertising agency. So when you're a white person, they convince you to be sexy and beautiful. You have to be brown. Yet the people who've got this beautiful, natural brown skin, and not dark, just a light brown, I'm browner than my wife, actually. All the women here, beauty or the adverts are related to how white you can be. So the women are judging themselves on the whiter the woman, the more beautiful they are. I'm going, don't go to America. That's exact opposite. And I'm just thinking, what a great example of media manipulation and product manipulation. So they convince the women here to be beautiful, you have to be white, yet the people who are white, to be beautiful, you have to be brown. So go and pick that one out, Cortis.
I'm really, really upset now that Shannon, Dame Shannon, is not here with us tonight, because she used to work for a company called StrataCage. And we were only just talking about this yesterday, funnily enough. And they supply software for audience management. So, like, this particular piece of software, audience measurement is proven to be the most efficient tool in optimizing ROI. With audience measurement, customer metrics are gathered, including customer impressions, dwell time, impressions per merchandised objects, impressions by time of day, and impressions by brand or category. Activa audiences, audience measurements help you know who is watching what content when. So you can tailor messages to particular viewers based on their interests, needs, and habits.
Well, they do that on Google all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I was going to say, Google does that.
Exactly, exactly, yeah. But there is actually software, you know, for anyone who questions it, there's software out there, like, this stuff is obtainable right now. Yeah, and it goes a lot deeper than this. Look at the new Xbox One. Who here understands the full capabilities of the Xbox One? That it can monitor your heart rate, and the camera never shuts off. It can tell when you smile at an ad, or when you get up and just leave the room when an ad's on. I'm sorry, but that is way too far, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
that is way too far.
There's a phrase out there you may or may not have heard. You teach people how to treat you. And so when we are out there, if we are acceptable to things that we're watching on TV, and we allow things to be shown to our children on TV, or we allow certain things to go on in school, you know, that are taught to our children without any kind of, you know, supervision, holding the teacher's feet to the fire, you know, why are you teaching my kid this stuff here, you know, this isn't educational, this is trash, or whatever, instead of actually paying attention, most of the people over here in the United States have gotten so busy, wrapped up in their own life, trying to keep up with the Joneses to have the nicest car, the nicest house, putting yourself in such a debt that it's just insane, that they're missing out on some really important portion of their life. Michael said it best earlier whenever he was talking about how the best time to get the control of things is to start teaching your children, you know, as they're being raised up, because when they come into the world with their, you know, beautiful little eyes looking up at you, you, to them, are their salvation. You know, you're going to guide them through life. You're going to give them all the tools necessary to survive in this world. And if you don't do that at a young age, and you don't set morals down at a young age, by the time they get up to the teenage years, then you got your work cut out for you. Now you go from, you know, taking your kid to school, like trying to go bail them out of jail. You see where I'm coming from? It's a really important thing that we get something done, you know, like here, like now. And in my view, it starts in your own personal home. You know, you have the power in your own personal home.
People take the easy way out.
Well, they do. And that's sad, because, you know, then we have to have these conversations. Why is it society deteriorating? Why is people running around trying to shoot each other or rape each other or stab each other in school? Well, you train a kid from the time he's 5 years old till the time he's about 16, 17 years old how to be a first-person shooter in some game, and now that he's desensitized to the whole murder aspect of things, you know, in the video game, you and I as adults, we understand that this is fantasy and these are things that we wouldn't normally do in reality. However, you know, a new, fresh mind coming in there, you know, the line drawn between reality and fiction starts to get blurred at some point. And now, you know, you throw in there the aspect of taking any kind of God or religion or moral beliefs out of some child's head. Now, you know, hey, I don't believe in God, so there ain't no consequences. I'll just go shoot some people and have some fun, you know, or that thing that you...
Well, I've got a question for Michael. Why do you think some of the poorest... I've been asking this myself this question over the last few years, and one reason I'm over here exploring and living with the people is, why do you think some of the poorest nations in the world continually rate as the happiest people on the world? I'm just curious. I haven't got the answer. I'm just still trying to find out the answer.
You want to answer that, Michael?
I'd like to go around the table, starting with Michael, ask him why.
Well, I suspect that they have real priorities at heart, Mark. I think that they are not... They understand that the most important thing is family. And I think when they focus on that family, they're focusing on the community as well. So, you know, when they're not influenced by materialism and consumerism and keeping up with the Joneses and that kind of thing. And, you know, if you have a roof over your head, clothes on your back, food on the table, you know, that's
a victory. That's a victory, just to have that sometimes.
Indeed.
I think you're right. Let's go around the table. I think you're right. I've seen this. Also, they have the child inside of them still. But let's go around the table. I'm interested in
everybody. Because I've grown up with very little. I spent, like most of our listeners know this, but discussed it several occasions, but you know, my past has been a bit dated. You know, I've left home when I was 13. I've practically brought myself up. You know, with all that, you know, I've been one of these people who's had very little, you know, and what I have in Shaziz and Buddy and you and Live Mike and Shannon and all these awesome people around me is worth a lot more to me than any material possession. You know, I don't have a lot. I've never had a lot, but what I do have is closeness to a lot of people, and those people that are near me are awesome people. You know, they make life worth living. I enjoy getting up in the morning, you know, getting on my net and you see all my friends, you know. I think the only material item I'd be worried about losing would be the connection to them, the computer. That would only be the connection, you know.
Well, one of the examples that I'd like to point out would be the show The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. I don't know if you've all had the opportunity to see that cartoon, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. There's actually a movie version, which is a little different than actual cartoon. But one of the things in there was a little town called Whoville, and there are little Whos down there. And the Grinch figured he was going to steal Christmas. Well, he went down, he took all their toys and all their food and the Christmas trees and everything like that. And then the next morning, when he was expecting to hear them crying and boo-hooing and everything, he heard the most joyful music coming up out of there. And because those Whos, they actually knew the true meaning of what it was, the holiday that they were celebrating. And it wasn't about the toys. It wasn't about all the gifts and everything. Modern society has become so commercialized that the average Joe has lost touch with the true meaning of Christmas in itself. And so my view is, those folks that haven't had the opportunity to be able to afford all these things or be bombarded by all the things that the media and advertisers put out there in front of them, when they've got a possession in their hand, they know, kind of like what Coltis said, that there's something more valuable than that possession, which is all the people that actually are together as a family. And these things don't matter. And so what they do have, they respect more because they're not spoiled to the fact that, you know, we live over here in the United States in essentially a gimme-gimme society where, you know, it's always about what I can get as opposed to what I can give.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. It's teaching acts of kindness. All right, who else we got in the room? I can't see everybody, so I'm just curious to get everybody's view on why some of the poorest people are the happiest.
Is James still here? Did we leave?
Yeah, James Swagger is still in the room, and so is Live Mike, from what I can tell.
See if we can get James's point of view on it.
Jenkins, can you hear me?
Wake up.
his mic might be muted.
Unmute your mic. Okay, well, Mike.
Yes. Yeah, there was another point that I could make if I could.
Go ahead.
I just typed it up in the chat box, and I think, you know, it really, to answer your question, it really does get into the nature of man. What is man? What makes man work? Where is man headed? You know, that it really answers the greatest and deepest questions, philosophical questions in the world. Why am I here? Where am I going? Okay. And I think the joy and happiness that you have observed in the poor people in the world, you know, where does it come from? I think, you know, it doesn't come from stuff. You know, man as an incarnate spirit, a body-soul construct, there is a spiritual longing within man that is only satisfied with spiritual things. And I think, you know, like I said before, that loving family. And I think that it's rooted in faith. Whatever that faith is, in a creator, that really does, in my experience, hold the key.
Yeah, we're all born with a question on our hearts. You know, where did we come from? Why are we here? And so with that said, there's your spiritual, you know, there's your spiritual journey. That's the first stepping stone. We haven't heard from Stalker or Dublin or James yet.
First one to speak gets the floor. Go.
Yeah, this is Dublin. I'm listening in. Enjoyed the show yesterday. Enjoyed the show today. Keep going. That's all I can say.
All right. Well, how about you, James? Are you in there? Okay, Stalker, what about you, brother? Are you in there? You got your mic on?
Yes, I'm here.
So what do you think about what we've talked about so far?
I think that there is a lot of information in this topic, and we can't discuss it in just half an hour. Mm-hmm. There is many topics about this, what we are talking about. Just the human freedom and the human mind, one of the biggest things we can talk about.
Well, yeah, the human spirit, once a man's tasted freedom, you know, you don't want to go back. And with that said, we're reaching out all across multiple different nations, from Ireland to Scotland to Russia to Germany, Japan, Australia, America. We're finding something out here. We're finding out that, you know, we, the average Joe, we kind of think alike, you know? You got... Go ahead, Cultus.
There was something else that someone mentioned. I think it might have been Mike just a moment ago about giving things away. And people should actually try that. When you've got a little bit of something spare, go ahead and give it away and see how you feel. Because as many of you know, we did all right out of the cryptocurrency recently. I'm not mega rich, but I've got more money now than I ever dreamed I would have. And, you know, that is still quite a small amount. But, yeah, I've got a bit of spare cash that really I could still live without. You know, so I've gone out and bought myself a few bits and pieces for the lab and that, but I've also taken a couple of people under my wing and helped them out, and, you know, sort of tried to set them up, you know, from their situation that they're currently in, and try to sort of change their life around a little and help them out. Now, doing that and just doing it selflessly, not expecting anything in return, this is the key. You can't expect to be repaid. You just do this for the hell of doing it, because you see someone and you see them in need, and you think, screw it, you know what? I got a few extra bucks, I'm going to wallet out and go in.
Watch the movie called Just Pass It Forward. It comes from a book back in the 1920s.
Yep.
I forget the guy's name. And it's to actually help somebody but not expect anything in return. And in fact, if you can do it anonymously, it's even better.
Yeah.
If they find out, ask them to do it for somebody else.
Yeah.
And I did that in this country here. I'm helping quite a few people, so is my wife. And they say, how can we repay you? And say, when you've got the means, you do it for somebody else.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how it works. I've been fortunate, Curtis. I've been a millionaire. I've lived in a $2.5 million penthouse. I've driven a $200,000 car. I was miserable. The richer I got, the more miserable I got, and the people who surrounded me were even more miserable.
Yep.
The poorer I've got, the happier I am.
Yeah.
And I can't figure that one out. But I'm living in a country. I'm hoping to find the answers, and I think Michael's perhaps pretty well nailed it on the head. Is focus on the family and doing things for people.
Yep.
And the funny thing is, the world's got a funny thing about abundance. The more you do that, the more comes to you to enable you to do it.
Exactly.
It's an unwritten law of the world. I don't know. I haven't got the answers. And people say to me, I wish we could do what you're doing. You're living it. You're living the word, you say. You're actually out there living those people. You're trying to develop technologies to help them and that. I say, yes, you can do it. You just have to let go of a few things, like your securities. The USA is based on insecurities. The more possessions you have, the more secure you feel. Well, in reality, it's exactly the reverse. But to try and get people out of that will they're on is very, very difficult to convince them of that.
Well, naturally.
They believe possessions are security.
Stay on the hamster wheel,
or your oxygen is going to stop. Type thing, and they're too afraid to just step off and see what the rest of the world is out there.
That's where what we're doing here on the Knights of the Round Table comes in to being so important. My wife, every once in a while, kind of gets a little bit discouraged about her radio show, whether or not she's doing any good or anything like that. And I try to tell her. I say, you know, as long as we're throwing positive pebbles in the pond, so to speak, we're sending positive ripples out to the world. We could sit around and we could complain about life and how terrible it is and all the crime and corruption, or we can actually throw some positive pebbles out there that will resonate throughout the land, you know. And it's sometimes when you plant that seed, you don't actually get to live long enough to enjoy the fruits of that seed. But when you plant these seeds in the children, then you plant hope for the future. And so by definition, her show, Hope, is a really important part of what it is that we're doing here in the Knights of the Round Table, is that we are planting the seeds of hope for future generations. We are the founding fathers, the mothers, the sisters, and brothers, and so on, of our children and our children's children's future. I want my children to grow up in a world just like you guys want your children to grow up in a world, to where they feel safe and secure and have all their needs met. And I think that what we're doing here at the Knights of the Round Table, as little as you may think that your portion being here, just by being here on the Knights of the Round Table, it's sending out positive ripples. It's bringing all these minds together from all the different nations, and we're finding out that we are more alike than we are different. You see where I'm coming from? So, in my view, it's really important what we're doing here. And I'm just honored to be part of it.
We're the ones who are going to set up the legacy for our children, our children's 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 children, aren't we? We've spoken about that 100 times.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that is what we're doing. That's you know, we are trying to set up something here, and, you know, we will educate our children, and hopefully you all will educate your children out there to open their eyes and look at the world for what it is, not for what they're educated to see. Because that's just a damn crime. That just, you know, and I've said it 100 times, education should be equipping a child with the tools to go out into the world and discover for themselves.
And when you find...
I'm bringing my daughters over here in 2 weeks' time and throwing them in the deep end. We've got a private school, they've lived a sheltered life in Australia. They've achieved remarkable things. My eldest daughter, flying aeroplanes, won the Australian Rowing Championship, done everything. But I'm bringing them into society. They're going to be in absolute shock. They're going to look at the neighbourhood and go, our chickens live in better housing than this. They're going to be thrown in the deep end of extreme poverty, where people don't even get $5 a month. And I've had a lot of American friends and Australian friends, can you bring my children over? Can we bring them over for a week? Can you take us up to the mountains, the tribal people? Said, why? We want to show our children. We want to get rid of their laptops, their phones, the TV for a week or two, and take these people to a fishing village and really learn what humanity is about. And I said, I'm getting all these requests. I'm thinking, perhaps I should do something like that. You know, I have
The old Australians changed a lot, hasn't it, Mark?
Yeah, it has.
You know, I mean, we used to be, we used to be, you know, strong boys who'd go out, you know, camping and hunting and, you know, we were men.
Yeah.
This day and age, I'm not allowed to use the word. It's offensive.
When you find when you find a family,
unbelievable.
When you find,
stop is trying to get a word in edgewise there.
Okay, one point.
Sorry, right, I'll shut up.
When you find
Mother of technology is helping or not helping our children? How much does it hurting them?
Well, I think in our case it's kind of helping them because it's giving us the opportunity to share what it is that we're sharing.
It's certainly a double-edged sword, though, isn't
it? Yeah,
it is.
The iPhone's
a zombie creator, but something like Knights of the Round Table on the internet radio is just freaking awesome. But, you know, you can't have good without evil, can you? So, the universe balances itself out every time.
Well, back on to the family deal. When you find a family who actually lives and loves and raises their family, their children, with moral values, you'll find a family of children that actually know what it means to the word I'm looking for are escaping me. You'll have respectable children who will respect others and aren't materialistic, and that's a hard task in today's society, especially over here in the United States with all the bombardment of all the media and things that the outside is telling your children how they have to be, how they have to dress or think or whatever. You know, they go to school, they share their ideas and their beliefs with each other at school, and so the kids at school may not be raised by parents that even gave a damn about them, and so now they're exposed to that particular deal, which you can't obviously shield your children from it, but if it starts at home and you raise your family in love and respect, then you're going to find that those seeds that you plant are going to go on to their children as well. Am I wrong?
That's been wrong.
I don't think we even have to try to shield them. We just have to teach them how to think about all the things that are on TV, and they have to realize
it's a war of the minds, isn't it? And I'm quite happy to send my kid to a fight like that.
Yeah,
because they've got it. We all got it.
I've got to go in a minute, but I'm going to finish off the little story. When I was in America, I never saw many acts of kindness from children or even adults. Okay, you know. Occasionally somebody slipped $5 for a hamburger at McDonald's is out in the snow begging for it. But here, the thing that touched me, that totally changed my life in many ways, I might have told the story before, but I was riding my bike here one day in the middle of nowhere, pouring with rain, and I needed shelter, and I pulled on to somebody's porch, a very little run-down little house. And I thought, in America, I'd have the cops called on me, or I'd have a gun pulled on me, or somebody come out shouting, get off my property, okay? Seriously, that's what I'd feel. Even in Australia, cool, this would probably happen, okay?
Yep.
Here, instead, a little 7 or 8-year-old girl, barefoot, rag dress, come out of this old door. I mean, this isn't really a house, it's a shelter, okay? And brings out a chair, a little crappy second-hand plastic chair, the best chair in the house, wipes it down and points to me to sit on it while it was raining, and then disappears behind the door. Okay? Man, I was crying the next 2 hours riding
the bike. Yeah,
when you see an act of kindness, the total stranger, right, has parked his bike and is sitting on their front veranda, right? He's encroached on their property.
Yeah.
And a little girl comes out barefoot with a rag dress and does that for you. It hits you in the heart.
Hey, Mark.
But I see this every day over here. I see it every single day, acts of kindness.
Mark, let me share a story similar to that I had. I was down in Porterville, California, you know, searching for my dad, my biological father. But we got lost down there, and we ended up at a little tiny house, and this couldn't have been much larger than a small garage or even a shed, but you know, it was maybe two and a half rooms in this entire house. And we were sitting out in the car in the rain, and we had talked to the folks to see if they happened to knew my dad, because he was at that previous address that was right next door. And this was a really poor family, a single mother with a little boy, and they invited us into the house, and they didn't have much. But what they did have, they was willing to share with us. They made us some fried potatoes with some salt and pepper on there, and she was all apologetic, like, you know, I'm sorry, this is all I have to offer you. And I'm like, no, this tastes the best thing I've ever had, you know. But it was the fact that here's some folks that had next to nothing, but what they did have, they were willing to share with two total strangers and try to assist me in finding my father. And so, you know, I just wanted to add that little story in there, because, you know, when, as you was telling me your story there, it reminded me of that.
Yeah, and I had poor people, but willing to share the last thing with somebody else who probably had more.
Yeah.
I see that every day here. Every single day I see it over and over again in every single way. If people, you know, you go to a party, if I go to a dinner party in Australia, of course, my age group is talking about their new four-wheel drive, their investment property, or what their super fund's going to give them when they retire, okay?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it's true. That's what happens in Australia. Here, they haven't got a super fund, they ain't going to have a four-wheel drive ever, they might get a motorbike if they're lucky one day.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't talk about possessions. You know what they talk about? People.
People.
Yeah. Or their environment. Like, but I don't have one anymore, so I think the government will have words.
It's probably that, mate, yeah.
But the thing is, that they focus on family, people, and character.
People. Yeah.
Well, Colt has touched on it earlier, as he was going around talking about how he was, you know, happy to have all of us as friends on there. And I feel the same way. I mean, it's a carbon copy of what Colt has said, because we are the true gold. My friends out there, Mark and Mike and Cultus and Stalker and James and Mike, who was on here, or Rick, who was on here just earlier. We are the true gold, you know. You can try to build yourself a stairway to heaven, but none of that stuff you can take with you. In the long term, you know, if I got my friends, if I ain't got my family, I ain't got nothing, you know. You said, Mark, you said that whenever you was at your wealthiest, that you weren't at your happiest. And the happiest to
me is
to sit around a Christmas tree. Maybe we ain't got no Christmas presents to share to one another, but we're sharing our love and our companionship and maybe some handmade things that we made. I made my wife a Christmas card or something, you know. And to me, a gift like that made out of love is more valuable than anything, any shiny object you could buy from a store.
This is true. I consider myself a very, very rich man. Incredibly freaking rich, actually. I know that if tomorrow I was on my ear out in the street with nowhere to live, I got places.
Heck, we'd get you over here. You could hang out with me.
This is my point. I can go to other countries and have places. Like, who freaking calls that? Like, I could be homeless just about anywhere in the world, and I'll be fine.
Well, in Boston last year, I spent Christmas in Christmas in Colorado.
Yep.
In Denver. Somebody shouted me a big flash hotel. And we're driving with a Lincoln Town car, driving to the hotel. And we go through a park, and I thought, oh, there must be a Christmas gathering. There's hundreds of people there. And it was snowing, and it was cold as all hell. It was the homeless. I said to the driver, who are these people? Is there a function? And he said, no, this is the homeless. I'm going, what? How can this happen in this great country? Because America is a great country. And here, I don't see homelessness. So go figure that one out.
Yeah.
Well, guys, what do you say we all take a music break and get us some coffee and come back refreshed? And did you say you had to take off, Mark?
Yeah, sorry, fellas. Probably I always talk too much on these shows. I've been hogging I want you guys to
talk. Oh, no, you.
I'll stand on the background and listen the rest of the night.
Brother.
You got me fired up tonight because I see you didn't
come up again.
Brother, don't ever hung back on us. The Knights of the Round Table, you know, get in there and say it. If it's on your heart, say it. That's what it's all about.
Yep. Here, here, she says.
As the social media link today read, it's your open forum radio network.
Yep.
There you go. We're just here to facilitate.
And so with that said, let's go take a coffee break, and I'll play a couple good tunes for folks to listen to while we're doing all that. How's that sound, everybody?
Awesome.
All right, great.
The jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight.
is Jesus the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. It's Old King Shaziz the Terrible here. Still here with a few of the knights. Some of the knights had to go ahead and take leave to go out and fight for truth and justice out in the world for all of mankind and the future of humanity. So who do we have left in the room? I see Dublin in there.
Dublin, Stalker, and myself, because I believe Rick has actually left. He's just still connected to Scott.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe he'll join back in at the last minute or something. We got about an hour left to go. This has been an excellent show as far as I'm concerned. What do you think, Coltis?
Oh, mate, we've had an absolute blast on the show tonight, and we've had some very educational material as well. So, I know for a fact there is people already hunting down the pod who missed the first half of the show. So,
well, we're going to get that podcast up for everybody who may have missed. If you're just joining in and listening to the Knights of the Round Table, we had a couple wonderful guests on there: Mark Dancy and Representative Rick.
Rick Scott. Sorry.
yeah, you killed my brain there, brother. It was the plan, wasn't it? But anyway, yeah, it's just testament that there is hope out there, and we've thrown a lot of good positive things on the table there that can be done, you know, to try to steer this boat in an opposite direction. And I'm hoping that everybody, it sinks into everybody. What we're doing here at the Knights of the Round Table, I feel, is really important. We're throwing positive pebbles. We're throwing positive information. We're throwing peace, hope, and love out there to the world. And we're finding out something really spectacular that in many nations around the world, we the people, we agree with one another. We have the same views, the same likes. We may come from different backgrounds and we speak different languages, but you ask the average Joe from any nation what they believe in, and it's here, you know. Am I wrong?
No, you're dead right, mate. Dead right. That's the thing. Like, you know, how do you explain it? Like, really, at the end of the day, we are doing the best we possibly can as individuals here at the Knights of the Round Table. We are all active and we're all trying as hard as we can to educate the populace as to what is going on. You know, I mean, you know me, few hours before the show every week, I'm pumping out links and trying to get more interest, and you know, people need to come and people need to hear what we have to say, because what is going on out there in the world, what you may choose you don't want to believe is going on out there, or what you just blindly don't see going on out there. I was really disappointed when I heard my sister-in-law the other day had turned around and said I prefer to think the world's not like that.
Well, you know, you could blind your eyes to the reality, but you know, either way, sooner or later, it's going to come down the line.
Yeah, you can ignore something as long as you like, can't you? But eventually, it's going to come back. And it's going to bite you on the butt.
Yeah.
If you haven't, it's like the old saying: a stitch in time saves nine.
Yep.
Right. Now you know straight up what it is, but just for the listeners, a stitch in time saves nine. Let's think about that. It's a sewing reference. Okay, so you got a pair of pants and a little hole starts coming in one of the seams. So you do one stitch then and there, and it saves you doing nine or more later when it peels its way apart. Now, you have this problem right now where you have this disgusting monster of the government, which really, let's put them into perspective. They are nothing more than another business. Okay, you don't have to answer to them. Simple. Just say no. Application to contract with me is denied. Simple.
Well, Ned,
not having it.
To add to your point, one of the things that I wanted to say to Rick while he was on here was that I'm happy because if you look at the system itself, if the entire system's corrupt and there is no good people in there trying to make a difference, then the entire system's corrupt, as opposed to, you know, the more good people you can get in government, the better government will become. The more people you can get out there throwing positive pebbles, the more better society will become. We lead by example. We teach people how to treat us.
Yeah. You have to treat people the way you would like to be treated.
Exactly.
You know? You know me. You know me. You know I'm a very sympathetic bloke to anyone with any problem. I'm the first one to throw an arm around a shoulder and try to be there for someone. My brother-in-law, he had an issue there a month or so ago where he couldn't find a job in town. And it was through fault of his own. And I'd had a few dramas a year or so ago, and they were really, really upsetting. Like, and they were big problems. And his response to me was, "You just need a man up, mate."
Huh.
And so, as I do, Shizzy, I bide my time. And he was going to be crying to me there a few weeks ago, "I can't get a job and I feel really bad." I turn around and I go, "You know what, mate? The same advice you had for me.
You just need man a man up.
You treat people the way you want to be treated." I would have given him all the sensitivity and all the emotion in the flaming world had he had not treated me like that in my time of need. I know even just saying that now, that was probably the wrong thing to do. Bears probably sitting there twiddling their thumbs going,
looking back in retrospect, it was probably the wrong thing to do, but you know, it could have actually pointed him a valuable lesson that maybe
I hope it did.
Yeah.
That is what I hope it did. I hope it made him think that next time he has someone in front of him that's basically in tears, mate, because life's about to go completely down a proverbial gurgler on them. Not that they're just not going to have a job, that they are not going to have their own freedom, okay? And that's your response. You can't expect anything more when you've got even a lesser problem.
Yep. And
you know, like, dude, you're just out of a job, man. I was going to lose my freedom. I really don't care you haven't got a job, to be honest.
Well,
you'll get over that. Life will just move on. Like, you know, roller coaster time, dude.
Well, you know, like we've been saying, man, you teach people how to treat you. And so, you know, I want to treat people with positive pebbles and positive messages, because that's the way that I want. I'm like a sponge, literally, you know. Everybody knows who Shaz is. He'll drop a tear, you know. I'm not afraid to say so, you know. If something bothers me, you know, I'm bothered. And that's all there is to it. I'm just a human being. But I'm like a sponge. When I'm around people who are negative, I feel negative. When I'm around people who are positive, I feel positive.
Yep.
And so I want to feel positive. I want you to feel positive. I want the world to feel positive.
Yep. That's right. It's, you know, I mean, we've spoken about this before. It's like depression. I never have, and I have technically suffered depression, but I didn't suffer depression. I had a really bad life at the time, and things just got to me. I didn't need medication. I needed a change of lifestyle was what I needed.
Yeah, and maybe a friend or two, you know, and somebody to
yeah, someone who cared.
Yeah,
you know? Because to be honest, for the first 30 years of my life, no one did care. You know, I grew up in a family where they showed pedigree bloody dogs, mate, and that was more important to them than their own children, you know. So I buggered off from home when I was 13 and brought myself up, you know. So, yeah.
You know, they say that you only get one chance to make a first impression, and the same can be said by you only getting one chance to make a last impression. So if the last words you ever hear from me is "I love you, brother," then, you know, I feel like I've fulfilled my spiritual journey. I've done what it is that I came here to do, to spread peace, hope, and love around the world. And so with that said, this is the way I'm going to live my life. If you happen to see Oshas is bombed out and he's got a tear in his eye because of somebody suffering across the globe, then you can understand it's a true heart that's coming from. You know what I mean?
Yep. You remind me then of an old song, actually. I think it's a Kenny Rogers song. And it's, "If Tomorrow Never Comes."
What?
And yeah, the song's about, he's singing about a girl, but the same thing goes for all of us, you know. He's worried in this song that, you know, if tomorrow never comes, will she know, you know, how he felt about her and how much he really did truly love her. Did he spend the time to tell her?
Yeah, that's the key.
And that's the key. That's it right there. Did he spend the time to tell her? And do that with your friends as well. Like I tell Shaz, you know, "Hey man, I love you." No, hey man. Right?
You know, hey, you know, whenever you walk away from that conversation, vice versa, You know, I walk away with a positive day, you know, because of that one positive pebble you threw in my life. I know somebody out there in this world actually gives a damn. I got a brother clear across the globe, for Pete's sake.
Do you know who always makes me feel really good after a conversation? And by all standards of Western civilization, what he does is, like, totally gay, right? But it's his culture, and I respect it fully, and the love that comes from this one little act at the end of a conversation every time always puts a smile on my face. That's really cool. He's a French bloke, we both know, Shaziz. Black Panther.
Yeah.
And he sends his kisses and loves to you and your family, mate. Last time I spoke to him.
That's wonderful, man.
See what I mean? Straight away, that put a smile on your face, didn't it? You know what I'm talking about. You know what he says.
Anybody who comes to my house...
Kisses is like the last word he always says. And to us, like America or Australia, they'd be like, what are you, man? Quit.
No, see, I
but it's nothing to do with that. Uh-uh. They actually just love brother and sister. They don't care, you know? And it's not a queer thing. It's just...
Point
that you can love their fellow man.
Point of what you're saying, brother, is you know, over here in the United States, you know, that's kind of like a taboo kind of thing. But whatever, you know, nobody gets in or out of my house without a hug. You know, I'm glad to see you.
Yeah,
hey, be safe and let me know when you made it home, kind of deal.
Yeah.
I've gotten to the point right now. My neighbor down the street, whenever we see each other, I give him a hug. You know, I say, how you doing, brother? Is everything all right? Anything you need? That kind of stuff. And
so you're just changing the world all by yourself, Patience. See what you do.
Well, hey, if I can do my part and I can make this world a better place, and every, you know, I go down the road and I start seeing total strangers hug each other and taking care of one another, then I feel like my spiritual journey is complete, you know?
Yeah, man.
I don't want to set back while the house is falling down. If I got a hammer and nail in my hand, I'm getting over there. I'm going to prop it up.
Exactly. That's what I was talking about before with, like, helping people. Like personally, I've like I said, I got a little bit of extra cash, man, so I'm able to help out monetary, you know. But in anything you can help out with, you know, old mate across the road, you know, notice his lawn's getting long. We've said this 100 times, you know. Don't dob him into your council. Go knock on his door, find out if he's okay, take your lawnmower with you, and offer to mow for him. Like,
and
if you have something you can give your fellow man, then hand it over.
And that
you don't,
that falls
you don't
in, that
don't
falls into the pay it forward, because you don't have to pay it forward with cash. And
that's
well,
right,
my wife mentioned something yesterday about tithing, and she was worried that people would get upset because she was talking about tithing to the church. And I told my wife something pretty profound on the way home. Tithing isn't just about giving money to the church. As a matter of fact, you know, I don't see God with a bank account, nor do I see Jesus with a bank account, and that's coming from my religious, right? But
yeah, yeah.
What I see tithing is more than monetary. You know, if you go out there and you mow your neighbor's lawn because he needs help, or you go out there and you put a shirt on a homeless person's back or give him some food or something, that is tithing to the church, you know? And so, you know, with that said, every positive pebble that you actually put out there, and, you know, whether you're a believer or a non-believer, you're doing good every time you do that. Am I wrong?
No, dead right, mate. You're dead right.
So, you know, it's not always about monetary. Sometimes it's just about something as simple as a hug. You know, you leave somebody with a hug, and you left them with a positive impression, and they just paid that forward because they go down the road and they find one of their friends and they give them a hug. Hey, that's kind of weird, dude. Yeah, but hey, love you, brother.
you can literally pay with anything forward, literally. Like this particular one particular person I've been helping out. First point I'll make is one thing that everyone's done so far, and it's turning up. But I can't pay you back.
Well,
I go, that's all right. I don't want you to pay me back.
I want you to pay it
I
forward.
I gave you that money. But hey, when you are back on your feet and everything is good, and you see someone in need, just think about what happened for you one time.
Yeah.
And you know, it goes without saying, you really don't have to tell someone to do that. You know, the reason why I did all right out of this crypto money is because someone handed me some, right? And it was worthless at the time. It was like, you know, maybe $50 worth of crypto cash, right? But one day that stuff went up in the market, and now I've got a little bit more cash, you know? And from that, just because they've given me a bunch of other stuff as well, this particular person, but, you know, that really gave me a sense of, well, hey, there are good people in this world, hey, you know?
There you go, that's the seed.
I always knew it deep down inside, just is, but this hardened exterior from the last 30 years kind of got in the way for a while, you know?
Yep.
But then I met all you guys, you know? And I had a very big lesson only a few weeks ago, was to learn to trust people.
I want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but what was your first impression of me the first time you came around? I'm just curious.
To be honest, is this...
crazy?
Mildly, yes. But a man who held... How do I put this? You... I'm really struggling for the right word here. It's like... You're able to vision Tesla's work like I am in your own head.
Well, my first impression,
you're able to consider everything as vibrations and everything else. And the first time I got on this radio show with you was the first time in my life that I started to let my guard down around people.
Well, I felt
really safe around you, Shaziz.
My first impression of my friend Cultus from clear across the globe was, here is a potential friend, brother, a person who has something to offer the world. And I'm glad that you stuck with me all the way through all the stuff that we've been through together, all the way here to Shaziz Radio. And, you know, we have kept the ball rolling. It wasn't me that kept the ball rolling. I just kind of helped planted the seed because I seen a brother out there, and in my view, all people out there are worthy of taking the extra time to try to do things like what you do with what's been given you. You know, it was given to me, and so I passed it on to you and everybody else that I can get involved in this deal, because I believe in the snowball effect, you know. If you throw a whole lot of love down the hill and it keeps picking up more on the way down the hill, that's going to become one huge snowball. And eventually, those out there who would want to throw nothing but negativity in the world, they can't help but getting mowed over by love.
Yep, and swallow it up.
Yeah.
They become part of the snowball, mate. They just don't even have a choice anymore.
And so that's why I keep telling, I keep trying to tell everybody, you know, what we're doing here is a very important thing. If we... And I know it's like preaching to the choir when I talk to the Shaziz and the Wake and the No Borders radio host and the We Roar radio host. I know I'm preaching to the choir because we are all of like minds already. But in order to get that snowball rolling down the hill, all of us are up at the top of that hill. We're pushing it. You know, we're shoving it. We're throwing all the love and the positivity we can down that hill, trying to get that avalanche started. And we will, if we succeed, which I do firmly believe we are succeeding already, we'll send a positive ripple, a tidal wave of love, peace, and hope through the future generations that will then look back on us and say, those folks back there were pretty doggone cool, man. You know?
Yep.
So.
That was us.
That's where I stand. You know?
Yep.
You know, maybe we won't live to see the full fruits of our labors and our seeds that we planted, but to me, it's a worthy cause to come here at the Knights of the Round Table and listen to what people from around the world have to say, you know, because they're us. They're just in a different town, you know, different country. They're us.
Yeah, but they're just our brothers and sisters, aren't they, mate? They're no different.
Yep.
We all got red blood on the inside, mate.
We still got Stalker there. Hey, Stalker, are you still there, brother? He's a...
yes.
So what do you think about all
this? Just listening to him.
So what do you think
about all this?
What's on your heart?
What do I think about what?
I thought you were listening.
he's kind of overwhelmed. Are you used to having people around you always talk about peace, hope, and love, brother?
No. People around me talk purely for money, And how bad is the situation in my country?
Yeah.
And would you like to hear your brothers and sisters around the world talking like we are?
Yes, that is why I'm here.
Well, we're glad to have you here. You are one of the honorable knights of the round table, and your views and your opinions and your world, it makes a difference.
Oh my God, thanks.
No, well, we do. We need your input. You are in a different part of the world from us. We really need to get in contact with all of the countries in the world, because what we want to say, we have a very important message for everyone, no matter what country you're in, and that's no matter what your government or our government tries to tell you, we don't want to fight with you. We just want to be your friends. We want you to come over and have a barbecue with us, have some food, have some party, have some fun.
Yeah, and wouldn't that be an amazing thing to get representatives from all different networks and nations to come together and seriously really have a barbecue?
Yes, maybe on a sovereign island or something.
Yeah.
That's Hawaii.
I like the way
yes,
you think.
Hawaii.
Is that like Hawaii, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Colt has already had his eyeball on Hawaii. He's itching to go.
Yeah, I most certainly do, mate. If I had that cryptocurrency, would rise. Quick, everyone, buy cryptocurrency.
Well, brother, when you get there, when you finally make it to Hawaii, make sure you get the picnic table set up before we get there.
Oh, don't you worry, mate.
And I've seen your cooking.
Casa del Cultus. Yes, that will be above my gate. Casa del Cultus. Where I've had nothing in my life, okay? So a house in Hawaii is freaking Casa del Cultus, right?
When you get rich to buy a separate island.
Yeah, don't worry, mate. As soon as I can afford a separate island, we'll be going to one. But Casa del Cultus is open to the world.
Well, then, there you go, and I've seen your cooking. I saw your video where you was putting up what looked like a really tasty breakfast there. And I'm going to be expecting some of that.
Not a problem at all, mate. Not a problem at all. But the deal will be, if you come, you be respectful and you help out.
I agree.
Other than that, do what you like. Okay.
Bring a big heart, and if you can afford it, bring a big side dish so we can help it out.
Yeah, if your heart's really, really big, bring me a beer.
You know, that would be an amazing thing to come together from all nations and have a picnic get together where we actually got to sample foods from other nations and be able to meet each other face to face and actually talk about the things that we've talked about on the Knights of the Round Table to one another. I think that is a true get together of peace and love, man. I can visualize this actually occurring, and if it was to ever come to pass that we could all literally get together from all different nations and do this, I think the world would stand up and take note. Look, these guys, they went and they started off a radio show, then they ended up buying an island, then they ended up inviting people from all nations there. They sat down and they broke bread together and they had a peaceful conversation and realized that, hey, we all have something in common. We agree. We don't have to fight. We don't need all that. We need solutions. We need positivity.
None of us do want to fight. This is the thing. Like, I don't want to fight with Syria. I don't want to fight with friggin', you know, Iran or Iraq or any of these countries. And I really, really want to hear from those countries. I want them to call into the show, and I want them to tell us what they think.
Yeah, I would love to hear from them.
Hey, I'm all for it. If you want to ring up and say death to all Americans, then, you know, and that is your true and honest belief, then, you know, have that. I really want to know the opinion of the other countries, because we're only being fed stuff through our media. Literally fed. Okay, we're not being, you know, told honestly what is going on. And I've had this argument with people, you know. It comes down to, did you see a bomb get dropped in Syria? No. It was on the news. No. Did you see it? Were you there?
Yeah, I would like to...
Because it's becoming to the point where we can't trust anything.
You're right.
So you have to question it all. You know, if they're telling you they dropped bombs in Syria, can't take it as gospel. You,
I would like to
Be there.
Before the individual comes on shouting death to America, I would like to have a one-on-one conversation with them. I would like to ask them, you know, what their hopes and dreams are. That way, whenever they, okay, we're live on the radio now. Now, what do you want to say to all Americans? And there will be that one positive seed in his head. But maybe all Americans aren't that bad, you know. Maybe they have been manipulated and lied to. You know, it's not like you can trust that if a government takes control of the media and they put out propaganda, you know. When I was growing up, we were told how bad the Russians were. You know, they were communists. Yeah. They were coming over to kill us. We were going to be invaded by Russia. We were going to be nuked by Russia. Up until I met some Russian friends, that was my view. Russia hated our guts. And then I found out that, hey, wait a second. These folks don't hate me. They're just like me. They want the same things I want. They want their children to grow up in a peaceful world. They want peace and the hope and love. They want to sit down and have that barbecue. They don't want me and them to get together. I send my children over to kill their children, vice versa. You know?
That's right.
You know, you go to Russia, they tell you America is evil. You go to America, they tell you Russia is evil.
It's propaganda. It's to start racism so that we're all at each other's throats and we don't have this conversation. But game's up. Because Ziz and I were too smart.
Yeah.
We're on the ball.
And we're having here, this conversation.
We're calling out to the world. Come on the show. Please. Please. Come on the show and tell us what your views are in your country. Because, and like I said, it doesn't matter. If the view really is that you know, you hate Americans or you hate Australians. You know, I'm using America a bit there, but, you know, we know why. That's sort of where everything gets aimed at anyway. Not that it should, because there's nothing wrong with you buggers. You're all good. It's just your mongrels in power.
Right? I agree.
And this is the thing, you know. We don't want to fight you, but if you want to fight us, we want to know why. And we're tipping whatever that reason is, it's going to be a nice, big, dirty lie.
Yep.
Because I didn't come to your house and do anything. Shaziz didn't come to your house and do anything. Hey, so I'm at a loss to who came to your house and did something, because it wasn't any of us.
Hey, Stalker.
Yeah.
After having this conversation and being on the Knights of the Round Table a few times, what's your view on Americans now? Do you think all Americans are bad?
I was never thinking they were all bad.
Well,
I know you people are very good, and there are no bad people in this world, only bad politicians.
Yeah, I agree. People that make wrong choices, man. You know, and that's why I wanted to point that out to Rick, that and I wasn't trying to degrade his position as far as being a representative, but I wanted to point out to how the average Joe feels. I mean, he's hearing it from average Joes, from your nation, Cultus's nation, Mike, everybody else, you know. He's hearing it from the average Joe. This is what we think of the representation that we've got, and the fact that he's out there actually fighting the good fight to stand up for something that he believes in and that I believe in, then to me, that shows that there is some resemblance of hope there, that if we can get more people in office, such as the ones that believe the way he does, you know, then we got a chance. But in the meantime, we can't rely on any representation around the world, but what we can rely on is our brothers and sisters around the world to do the right thing as we're doing here right now, simply by having this conversation and giving this information to people. How do you guys feel about that?
Yep. Come on, do it.
Yeah.
Don't everybody speak at once. I wouldn't want you to hurt yourself.
Well, I don't know what's left to say on top of that, mate. You pretty much nailed it right there, haven't you?
Well, you know what? It comes from the heart, brother. Just like, you know, everything I've said to you before, it comes from the heart. You can trust, or you can judge a man's true test of character when you know that I'm not afraid to cry in front of my brother. You know, if it's on my heart, if it's on my heart, and that's the way I feel, I'm not ashamed. And we got to get the whole world to feel the same way, to where they're not ashamed to feel their feelings, where they're not ashamed to believe their beliefs, when they're not ashamed to go out there and stand up for what they truly believe to be the difference between right and wrong. And the average Joe is afraid.
Very afraid, unfortunately.
Therein lies the key. If you live your life in fear, you're obviously not enjoying your life. And there's so many of our brothers and sisters around the world who spend their time living their lives in fear, you know, trying to protect what sovereignty they got left, trying to protect what freedom they got left. And there's a small minority of elite individuals around the world who control the money and the finances and manipulate the media to the point where, like you said earlier, you don't know what to believe or not. The propaganda being spewed out there telling the Russians how the Americans are evil, or vice versa, telling the Americans how the Russians are evil, or whatever, you know, from whatever nation. We're told that over there there's terrorists. Everyone in Iraq's a terrorist. Everyone in Iran or Syria is a terrorist. There's terrorists all around every corner. And so by them telling all the people out there who are so busy in their little bubbles, and this is the only bit of information, oh yeah, sure, we'll do our patriotic thing and join the military. We'll go over there and we'll beat the crap out of them, you know. But what they should have done is do a little bit of research ahead of time and realize that these people that they're getting ready to go over there and do this to are people just like themselves. You know, they have children, they have mamas, they have papas, they have grandparents. They are people with hearts, they are people with dreams and emotions, and they have needs just like you do. So, as well as you have it in your nation, or as bad as you have it in your nation, trust me when I say around the globe there are people in worse conditions than you can possibly imagine. And it's going to be up to we the people to reach out the hands and lift them up, you know. We're the only ones that can do it. The elite obviously aren't going to do it. If they were going to solve starvation, it would have been done.
Don't make me laugh, mate. They're not going to solve starvation. Yeah, Stalker, that's the go. No worries, buddy. Thanks for stopping by. And you have a good week. We'll see you next week.
That's been an honor, brother.
And he's gone.
All right, well, I hope you got that message. Anyway, he'll have the podcast to fall back on. But I guess it's down to you and I, brother.
It is, mate. Then there was two.
Well, you know, it's a positive...
Save the best for last. It's okay.
It's a positive message. And it, I know from it comes from your heart, comes from my heart, comes from all the Knights of the Round Table's hearts, and the listeners out there listening into, you know, sometimes we get a little crazy, we get a little madness going on, but sometimes you have to get a little crazy to point out the stupidity, the ludicrousy of the whole mess to begin with, to point out the obvious, so to speak. You see where I'm coming from?
Hey, if we work on the definition of sanity, and if we were sane, we wouldn't be sitting here, because apparently being sane is just like loving your government, like being a bop.
Oh yeah,
that's sane. Insane.
I'll probably wear what they call a tinfoil hat, which is supposed to be aluminum.
Aluminum foil.
I will probably wear a tinfoil hat if it means making a world that I can send my children out to, knowing that they're going to live in peace and love and safety. And I'm not talking about a communist one-world style government. I'm talking about a world by the people, for the people, of the people.
Sovereignty.
Exactly.
Simply put, sovereignty. You know, you were born to this planet. You belong to this planet, if anything. Otherwise, you belong to no one. You certainly do not belong to another man. You're not owned.
And by definition, being in debt is servitude. You know, you owe somebody something.
Hey, you're born into debt, mate. You're born into debt. We know this. Like, from the day you were born, you start accumulating debt.
Yep.
You know, you are set up to fall into a debt trap. It's that simple. And, you know, I mean, that's scary. You know, I mean, you're signed up to be a part of this company, the government company. You know, this company, you're signed up to be a part of this company before you are competent in your own mind to make a decision whether or not you want to be a part of it.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Last time I checked, that's illegal. Unless I'm old enough to sign a piece of paper for myself, which in this country is 18, I don't know what it is in America.
18.
18. You've got to be 18 to sign a legal document. Right. Yeah. So that means that every single birth certificate out there...
is fraudulent.
Is fraudulent. Like, your parents signed it, that's fine, but... well, sorry, they don't speak on my behalf. I speak on my behalf, and I don't want to be a part of this company.
While you were a minor, they used their, executive,
You
want to call it, to work in your best interest, but it wasn't a contract that you ever signed to put yourself into servitude. It was
exactly.
Something that was basically hornswoggled on to the parents. Well, there had to have been a time in history where there was no birth certificate, you know?
Exactly.
I would love to figure out when that original date first came around, where the birth certificate first showed up on the scene. There was a time when you was just born, you know, and you were named, and you were, you know, your family. Now,
yep.
you're a portion of a huge corporation that seriously doesn't give a damn, because if they did, we wouldn't be sitting around having these conversations. We wouldn't be sitting around talking about starvation or sickness or wars or stuff like that. We would have had a representation out there who believed in doing the right thing, you know, and at all costs would do nothing but the right thing. You don't go over and bomb a foreign nation and like I said, peace never come from the end of a gun, you know?
Yeah.
All you do right. is perpetuate, you know?
Yep.
You go into a crowded room and you start a fist fight with somebody, you're making a lot of people mad. And a lot of people, after the fist fight in that particular room's done, aren't calmed down yet. They're still mad. They go out into the world, they start another fist fight. And the next thing you know, you got a doggone riot that started off from one knucklehead that decided to go in there and offend or disrespect some other individual just for fun or whatever purpose that he had on his mind or whatever. So, you know, what you do in the world seriously does make a difference.
It does. We hit on this almost every week, is that, you know, this isn't a case of waiting for your mates to stand up and you go join them. This is a case of you as an individual need to get up off your butt and decide, oh, I'm going to do something to change the world today.
Yeah, if you think the world sucks, do something to make it better.
Yeah, and if every single person in this world stood up tomorrow and did one thing to make this world a better place... imagine that. 100 million new better things. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What, we can't achieve that? We haven't achieved that. Why? What is wrong with you all?
100 million.
Sorry, I know you're our listeners, and I do respect you, you know, but what the... Seriously?
100 million positive pebbles thrown into the pond, starting a tidal wave of love, peace, and hope for the future of humanity. I mean, I would love to be in that tidal wave.
For the mathematicians out there, 1% versus 99%. And if we really crunch the numbers, it's like 0.00001% versus 99.999999. There's like 50 of them, and there's like 100 million of us. Like, do you not understand that we, like, seriously freaking outnumber them? Like...
yeah.
Like, what the heck? Just stop paying your taxes tomorrow. Who are they going to send after you? Because who are they paying? What, like...
The problem is the fear factor. People are afraid to not pay their taxes because they believe that the average their next door neighbor is going to continue to pay his out of fear, and the next door neighbor from them is going to do the same thing out of fear.
Until they see the first 100,000 stand up and do it, they're all going to sit back and wait for that first 100,000 to stand up instead of being one of the 100,000 and standing up and doing it.
See, an army doesn't rush in there. An army doesn't wait for one brave soul to jump out there and run to his doom. An army takes and rushes. They rush out there together. They bum rush the other crowd, and
That's it. What was the easiest way to win any strategy war game?
Overwhelming force.
Overwhelming force. And what do we have as the populace of this planet?
Overwhelming force.
We have. You know, and you can turn around and you can say, oh, you know, but you've got the military and you've got... Really?
What?
Really? You think they've got the military wrapped up there? You really think so? I don't.
We're not talking about... We're not talking about
superior officers standing up and having a go at this junk, mate. Yep. So, hey,
we're not talking about everybody grabbing up a pitchfork, a brick, a ball bat, and rushing towards your local representative. We're talking about you standing up and starting with overwhelming force. Start loving your neighbor. Start loving your friends, your enemies. Love everybody around the planet. You know, it's kind of hard to be mad at somebody when they're continuously being kind to you, you know? And so,
isn't it?
With that said,
If we were all so overly nice to each other, you know, and we all respected each other, this problem would already be gone because we would have dealt with it as a whole.
Yeah, and we just get up and when we don't like the food that the elite are feeding us, you know, we just get up and walk away from the table, set up our own table, and invite our brothers and sisters around the world to come over and have some good food.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the way it should be, and I believe that's the path that we're on. As long as we keep shows like the Knights of the Round Table and Awake Radio and We Roar and all, man, No Borders and all of them, as long as we keep these networks growing and multiplying,
yep.
Then we got it made. I mean, we started the snowball. It's up to everybody after that snowball to either jump on, be sucked in, or whatever. But
yep.
You know what I'm saying? The love is coming, whether you like it or not. You know.
Yep.
You're getting a hug from your brother.
Yeah, Shaziz is coming to hug you.
Yeah. isn't that a scary thought?
And I'm right behind him. I'm gonna give you a hug too.
Then after that, there's going to be some more folks. Michael will be there. You're getting so many hugs, you're going to be tired of hugs.
But then there'll be more hugs. You won't have time to be tired.
Yep. And eventually, I found this to be a fact, is that the more that I hang around people and keep the same philosophy and beliefs and lead by example, that I'm starting to wear people down. I'm getting hugs from people that were normally, they felt a little weird about it, you know? Hey, come up, give me a hug. How you doing, brother? Oh, good to see you too. You know, life good. Yeah, everything's going fine.
Like, from racism to sexuality, we've been scared off everything.
Yep.
You know, you can't hug another dude. What if he's gay and he wants to touch your ass? You know, like, get over it. Like, you know, and you know, like the whole racism thing, like all this stuff with Syria and bloody Japan, North Korea there a while ago, and, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq and all these countries. It's racism propaganda. It's make me hate them so I don't go and ask the questions that they really don't want me to go and ask. Like, hey, do you really want to come bomb my country, or do you want to come have a barbecue?
Yeah,
barbecue?
There you go.
Oh, it's late, mate, let's go. And they don't want that conversation to happen.
An example of what you were talking about would be a simple example of an average hitchhiker these days. In the old days, you know, I'm driving down a road, I saw, you know, somebody who was broke down, I would stop and help them change a tire or give them a lift to the nearest town or whatever. And nowadays, it's put into everybody's head about fear, you know. Oh, he might be an axe murderer, he might be a rapist or a killer or whatever, you know. But, you know, if you judge every single book out there, if you judge your brothers and sisters by the cover that you see, you know, I said, you know, you only get one chance to make a first impression, you know. Some people look upon somebody because of the way they're dressed, and they will think, oh, well, he's not a very good guy. He's probably into drugs because look how he's dressed. He's got tattoos or something like that.
Yep.
That guy with that tattoo and that biker shirt on might be the most generous, most loving, caring person in your... And it might have been the best friend you would have ever had in your entire life. But yet, you took one glance at that individual and made all these assumptions via the information that you were given, that, oh, all bikers are bad, you know. All black folks are dangerous. All they want to do is fight with you. I've got a lot of black friends around the world, and all they want to do is love each other. You know, they want to love people. So, you know...
Media propaganda certainly won't have you believe that, though.
No, they don't. They want us continuously worried about whether or not there's a terrorist under the.
Quite honestly, if I was dumb enough to just blindly take in the media in Australia, like, black people are the only people who do crime in America, apparently.
Yeah,
that's a load of hogwash.
White people do crime. Asians do crime.
There's probably more white dudes who do crime. They maybe get away with it, but there's probably more white dudes doing crime in America than there are black dudes. Like, come on.
Well, brother, nothing.
Look at all them stools down the river, man. Come on.
Nothing would surprise me. I'm serious. Nothing would surprise me if the true numbers ever came out. Nothing would surprise me.
That's right. The true numbers, mate. They're the ones I'm talking about. The true ones, not the ones that are fabricated so we can, like, you know, come up with a breeding program to get rid of them or something like. It's still doing here in Australia, mind you.
But not many
people are aware of that, but it is.
For a black person to look upon a white person and say, because of my heritage, you must be racist too, is cheating me out of a potential friend. It's cheating him out of a potential friend. For me to look upon that black person and say, well, you know, I've seen the news and all you guys do is run around killing each other and white people, that would cheat me. Either way, we're both being cheated. And this wasn't my view that I was born with. When I was born with a loving heart and loving eyes, you know. I saw the world as a wonderful place, a place that I can go around and experience all this wonder, you know.
That whole fear of trusting someone that's put in you, that could have cost me the dearest friend I've made in a long time if I had have listened to it. But I overcame it, and I just went, you know what, screw it. I'm going to chuck some money that way, and you know what? We'll just see, you know? Like, certain things were a bit sus in what were going on, but, you know, it was a country difference. It was a difference between what happens here in Australia and what happens in this other country. And once I had all that sorted out, well, it all just made perfect sense.
Yep, and by stereotyping people of the world and all that, all you do is cheat the world of what could potentially be some wonderful individual that can really make a difference in the world. I mean, you know, there's a lot of Muslims out there that I know for a fact are just wonderful people. Wonderful people. And I'm told on the TV via the propaganda, which they talk out the side of their mouth because they don't want to talk down Muslims, but they talk bad about Muslims. You know, they emphasize the point of the radical Muslims, you know, and some people, that's the only thing they heard was the radical Muslims part. And suddenly, you know, we're at war against the Muslims. We're not at war against the Muslims. We're not against the war. We're not at war against the Christians. It's the folks at the top who want to keep the pot stirred continuously of racism and hatred and arguing back and forth between Democrats versus Republicans. As long as they keep us pitted against one another, we accomplish nothing and they gain everything. They gain slaves. They gain people who will do and follow their instructions, go over there and kill the yellow man because the yellow man is supposed to be the bad guy or the black man or whatever, you know, and then you hear things like, I hate Americans, I want to kill you, you know. Well, that's their only view. That's the only view that they got. They didn't get the view from me. They didn't come talk to me. They didn't come talk to cultists. They didn't come talk to Mike. They didn't hear somebody when I was talking to Rick on the deal, and I told him about the representatives not of understanding or are losing touch with the average Joe. They don't come talk to us. They don't ask us what our true views are. They don't come one-on-one and have these conversations. And so my compliments and appreciation to Rick for coming on Shaziz Radio here and telling me that there was somebody out there who believed the way that I did, who's out there fighting a good fight.
You gutsy man, that one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Look at the job he holds and the book he wrote. Like, that's not asking for trouble, nothing is.
Well, you said it, cultist. we want people to come over and have a barbecue with us. We don't want to go over and throw bullets at each other.
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't understand where that thought would even come from.
Well, it comes
I don't even own a gun.
It comes from a military-industrial complex that found that it is profitable to kill, it's profitable to maim, it's profitable to destroy. You know?
Yep.
And...
Yeah,
until
this is horrid, mate. This is horrid. This has to end, and it has to end now. Like, it doesn't have to end when, you know, a few more thousand people have died, and, you know, a few more people have got the poops up and decided, you know, to make a bit of a song and dance, but that's just going to flutter away into the background and just, you know, become silent like everything else. No. It's now we have to stand up as a freaking whole, as a family, you know, because we all are. This is our planet. We all live together.
We're in the same boat.
Why should a small few control everything that we do, everything we eat, everything we breathe, smell, touch, taste, everything. Everything's going to be under their control. And what isn't going to be already is.
Yeah. You know? It's going to be... It's going to be when we, the people, stand up and say, no, sir, I am not sending my children over there to kill their children.
That's right. It'll be when we turn around and say, enough is enough.
Yeah, exactly.
We want our countries back. We want our planet back. We want you to be held accountable for what has happened for the last 30 years. We want you to be accountable for what happened last week with such and such.
Yeah, when you put your hand on the Bible... And you swear to uphold the Constitution and protect our rights and sovereignty and our freedoms, then you take that oath serious, because we will hold your feet to the fire if you don't.
We are going to start holding you accountable. There is no more of this, you know, you'd be able to get away with it and there's going to be some little loophole. When we the people decide to stand up, I honestly don't know if hangings are going to be out of the question. At least for the first round,
Here's an idea for you. I say
seriously, consider that.
I say we either we the people purchase a huge island for all the representatives and put them on there and let them control their own destiny. Or we reenact the space programs of the world and we kind of send them over to populate Mars.
Your first idea was right. This is what we do, Shaziz. We put them on an island, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to be like this. Everyone gets to control the island for a month at a time. Everyone else must obey the rules and laws set by the leader of the island.
Yeah, if you make the law, you abide by it.
Oh, no. This is their island, remember?
No, I'm saying... On that island. On that island.
Each one of those politicians gets to control all the others for an entire month. If their law is that your entire day must be spent collecting food and water for the leader, then that's all you're allowed to do. And if that means you starve to death, that means you starve to death.
Yep. But my
right?
my
the reason why I'm saying to do this is because each and every one of them bastards is then going to have to suffer just the way we all have over all of these hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Each and every one of them is going to have to go through one process, 1 month of being leader, and everybody else. So, literally, there's only one person getting away every month.
Well, the point I was trying to...
They're straight back into the system. They're getting the same treatment next week, you know.
The point I was trying to pile in there with what you're saying is that the laws that they will have to live with, just like we have to live with the laws, and somehow, like you said earlier, they find ways to skirt and loopholes. There's no skirting loopholes on this island. They have to abide by the same laws that they create. And so if this is an oppressive law, they have to live with it.
What happens in power? The guy with the power doesn't abide by the rules. And this is what we expect to happen on this island. Right? He is going to make all the rest of them suffer miserably, because one, he's greedy, and two, well, they all did it to me, so I'm going to do it back. They're going to destroy each other out on that island mentally long before they do it physically.
Yep.
And you know what? I've got not one ounce of sympathy.
I don't either.
Not one. You get what you pay for, mate. You treat people the way you want to be treated. You treated us like this all this time? No worries.
And then when we the people over here on the mainland look over and we see the people over there finally figuring out what we figured out a long time ago, that they can live together in peace and we can see that they're functioning, maybe we'll invite them over to the picnic. What do you say?
No.
No? Just let them go?
No. It's our picnic. They had their picnic for 2,000 years. They can just go right off and sod, mate.
All right, that's it then. They're on their own.
No. Look, probably, that's something like I'll look back on it now straight away. Love our brother, I know. Can I at least punch him in the face before we leave and sit down at the picnic?
Hey, that reminds me of a show I seen, a Robin Hood show, is a spoof on it, where, Little John, he's like a real big dude, and Robin Hood went out and he stole all this stuff, and as he was giving it to him, he said, well, shouldn't we make them pay for it to some extent, and so they ain't like they're stealing? And they said, okay. So everybody that came up in line to get a gold piece of gold or something, he popped them. I seen this old lady walk up, and I said, surely he's not going to hit that old lady, but yeah, he did.
Was it
I can't remember the name of it, but it was funny. Anyway, we're down to the wire, brother. It's time to sign up. It's been a wonderful show, and we've touched on a whole lot of stuff, and hopefully we put some positive seeds and pebbles out there for people. And so I'm gonna give you the last word, brother.
Alrighty, buddy. Well, as always, come check out the website. It's Cultus, KULTUS.weebly.com. And we've got plenty of links over there. We've got plenty of links to all the radio networks, and we've got links there to my work and Chiziz's work and some other inventors' work there. I'm still building up the website, so bear with me. There is a huge section on something we didn't even touch on tonight, and that's the Pop Day competition that's coming up.
Oh yeah, we gotta get back on that.
2 days. 2 days it starts, mate. 2 days.
Alright.
2 days the Pop Boat competition starts.
Well, after this show, we'll touch base and get some things worked out. How's that sound?
That sounds awesome, buddy.
Alright, well, peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Man.
Got it. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here.
Oh. How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, three dots when we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam off. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table.
many times we've given rhyme to our quite something able. We're off from mad and kill up, we sing from the diapamola.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Fulfill the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.